Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Coach Menachem Bernfeld on this beautiful Sunday night. Seems like the first night of winter over here. Really appreciate you for joining us. And like I say every week, thank you for joining. Thank you for posting on your WhatsApp statuses, emailing people about it, letting people know about it. Just speaking to Rabbi Yisrael Kleiman, you're saying just the amount of people that come over to him. It's a chavad chavar islech. People talk. People, you know, it's a place to really get a lot of clarity on so many inyanim that we deal with. So let's continue on growing and keep on moving the conversation. If anyone wants to join the WhatsApp chats, please WhatsApp me at 732-314-1710. And I will send you to the community chat. You can also go to menachembernfeld.com. And you can sign up for his weekly emails where he sends out the speakers, the replays, and all the hack in Coach Menachem land. I'll also post in the chat soon the Coach Menachem WhatsApp community chat. You can click on that and join as well. I want to thank all the advertising sponsors, the Lakewood Scoop here on Lakewood, for always promoting us on the Lakewood Scoop. With Israel, you're on the Lakewood Scoop. Check it out. Ellie and Aaron from Five Town Central that promotes us always on the Five Town Central website and the replays, and Skyla Kaufman, JCM for promoting us on all Jewish digital platforms. Again, next week, Sunday night, November 17th, the speech is getting a little bit repetitive because we've been doing this the last few weeks. We're going to have an amazing share of Israel. It's going to be one of the best shiurim that we ever had here. And how do I know it's going to be so good? Because it's a surprise speaker and it's a surprise for me. So we don't know yet, but once we confirm it, just like we did that last week and we have Rabbi Yisrael here this week, next week, the same thing. And now we're going to go to tonight's share. Tonight's share is 208. And, we're going to turn to the gematria of 208, Rabbi Yisrael. And you're going to tell me how amazing this gematria is. We really were going to have you on a long time ago, but it had to work out with the gematria. So now we got you. Here we go.
All right. Shalom Evracha to Zoom share number 208. Shalom Bayis redefined why giving in isn't always the answer in marriage. One of the goals of Shalom Bayis is that each spouse should receive respect, which leads us up to tonight's gematria of 208. Nehagim Bechem Kovid. You will be treated with respect.
Now we're going to turn it over to Coach Menachem Bernfeld. He's going to open it up. Again, like I say every Sunday night, we could be doing a lot of other things tonight. Everybody has busy zachen to do, chasanas, weddings, who knows what else. But we're spending here late Sunday night to grow together. So, Coach Menachem, what are we doing here tonight?
First of all, Shkoyach Rabbanoyach for the gematria. Every Sunday night, he has the gematria. Da'ir Shehelchon Zum Koyach Mamshev Tzazah. And tonight, I want to welcome everyone. I know there are new people here. Welcome everyone to another Let's Get Real with Coach Menachem. And we're doing shir number 208, Baruch Hashem, with a lot of Siyata Deshmaya, like we hear week after week. Hashem is with us. Hashem should help continue. And here we are. Before we start, I want to thank all of those. I sent out the survey in the email for those who didn't get in the email. And you're not part of our list, send me an email that you want to join, coachmenachem@gmail.com, so you can get the updates. And the survey basically asking, you know, people how to continue the growth, continue the conversation. We have Sunday night, different speakers, different ideas. And thank you for your response. Basically, people want, you know, bigger groups, smaller groups, networking, ideas. And it's always good to have a safe place, a place where you can continue the conversation, something that's, you know, challenges that people have to, you know, to continue learning, to help them on the journey, different resources, connections. And hopefully, Mitzvah Hashem, we're working on it. And hopefully in a few weeks, we'll be able to lay it out for the, you know, I'm not sure on what platform, but if you have any ideas, always welcome, coachmenachem@gmail.com. Let me know what are your thoughts. And tonight, Shalom Bayis redefined. Shalom Bayis is something that we talk about a lot, something that people are trying to figure out. You know, there's different levels. Like I mentioned many times, people are like, Shalom Bayis, he gave up. It is what it is. You can't really change it. Make it work, or people are beginners, how to make the best out of it, get better, better and better. And we know that it affects our chinuch and the atmosphere in the house. Just sitting at home, the ruach, the energy, It all depends in the relationship. Also important to know, discussing tonight, setting boundaries, being able to say, you know, this is what I need. It's not only in Shalom Bayis. This is in any relationship with your kids, coworkers, your neighbors. Anytime you want to have a healthy relationship, to continue the relationship, to be able to work together with others, you have to learn the skill we're going to be talking to tonight. Not that easy, but it's something, it's a must. Because if not, you get stepped on and basically burnt out. What I heard from a friend of ours, Mordechai Weinberger, mentioned many times, saying yes is always saying no. That means if you say yes in one place, you're saying yes somewhere else. And think about somebody who does chesed all day outside of the house. So basically he's not home. So he's saying yes outside, but no at home. Think about somebody who, you know, a mother who's there for the kids, which sounds amazing, but she doesn't take time for herself. So sometimes she does have to say no for a few minutes to her kids so she can say yes to herself so that she should be able to continue because, you know, it sounds like I'm doing the best. I'm there for my kids 24/7 and myself never. But many find themselves burnt out and they just can't continue. So it's important. The idea of boundaries is important in relationships no matter where you are. So, Amit Shen, this is going to be our discussion tonight, but a real question is how to, in a healthy way, how do we do it? It shouldn't be in a way that the other person feels offended, feels that you're running away. How do we do it? And I want to thank Rabbi Yisrael for being here tonight with us. And this is the conversation of Mr. Shem. We should have a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and we should be able to learn how to apply it in a way, in a healthy way, Mr. Shem.
Coach Menachem, beautiful. So guys, let's get into it tonight. Okay, first I'm going to start off with reading Rabbi Yisrael's bio. Joel Yisrael Kleiman, LCSW, is a therapist in private practice in Lakewood. He works with adult males struggling with anxiety, depression, and relationship issues. He's the author of Parenting by Design and You Plus Me Equals We. He's an adjunctive professor at Torah College teaching in the Graduate School of Social Work. He also wrote a book, I just said, You and Me. I posted in the chat. Shem Menachem will send out the link. And we appreciate Rabbi Kleiman for coming in. If anybody doesn't know, this is Rabbi Heshi Kleiman's son from Praying with Fire. But I'm just saying that because Rabbi Heshi has been on our shir twice already, and we both shir have been amazing. And also his brother-in-law, Yeshua Sachs, who's been on our shir also twice. He's also amazing. So it seems like your family is the Shtickle Coach Menachem family. So, Hashem, the next family retreat, we're all going to go together. The greatest chus to have you here tonight. Stroll, the floor is yours. Open it up.
Thank you. Yeah. Any book that directly comes to Yerusha from my father. So it's nothing I was able to do. It's just, I got it straight from him. So tonight's topic is, as Coach Menachem mentioned, a really, really, really important and salient topic. And it's a topic that goes far beyond Shalom Bayis. It's a topic that really steps into other relationships. Pretty much any relationship is always going to be this interplay between boundaries and between closeness. And how do you navigate those things and how do they play off each other? Interestingly enough, the most difficult place to kind of apply this and to work it out is in marriage. So we're really starting in the most complicated spot of all of them. Other relationships are a lot of times a lot easier. A lot of times people who don't struggle in boundaries with colleagues and friends will struggle in Shalom Bayis. I would say maybe the second most difficult place to apply this is with children. But I'll see a lot of people who don't struggle with applying this with children. They do a wonderful job and they're able to dance the dance very easily, skillfully. But when it comes to marriage, they struggle a lot. So there's no question that when you're talking about the subject of boundaries and you're talking about the subject of how that interfaces with relationships, the trickiest and most complicated place to apply that and to apply that well and skillfully, and the place where it's going to be sometimes the most difficult to get the right tools worked out, is in marriage. Now, some of this is a product of the education that we've all been given. For the last many decades, the predominant, and I would venture to say the sole message of Shalom Bayis in the Frum community has been about Vatranus, has been about giving in. Now, you know, many rabbanim get up there to say a shalom bayis here, and they say this as if, you know, to a certain degree, like, you know, like this is the first person to say this tremendous new thought, and they say, you think that you'll do better if you are selfish and you go look at what after what you want? No, folks, it doesn't work that way. To the contrary, by giving to the other person, you gain even. This is really the thrust of Shalom Bayis education over the last many decades, and it's a very good message. It's a wonderful message, and there are a lot of communities outside of our community where this is not the message. This is not the dominant messaging, and it's very unfortunate. And a lot of people in relationships, and I think many years ago where this message wasn't pushed very much, people a lot of times acted in ways that we would look at today and we'd be quite shocked that people can treat the spouse this way, they can act that way. So I think there's no question that it's very, very, very good that this is the dominant message in Shalom Bayis in today's world, in the firm community at least. On the other hand, it's like the Rambam says. The Rambam says that, you know, you have a lot of midas, and you can't say this is a good midah or that's a good midah. The Rambam says the key is to have the balance, the midah hamamutza, to be able to find the balance between the two ends of the spectrum. So I wonder if perhaps, and this is a lot of what I've seen in my own practice, is that perhaps the message has been pushed very far on that end, and we need maybe a little counterbalancing of that message, a little counterbalancing of like, okay, so when is Vatronis not necessarily the way to go? So really the book that I wrote and the approach that I've taken has been a bit of a counterbalance. It's making that assumption that I'm talking to someone who's living in a world that's so inundated with the message that Vatronis is what's so important, and now we're kind of trying to bring a little balance the other way. If you're someone who doesn't know of this message, who's not aware of this concept, who hasn't heard this ever before, then I don't know if necessarily this is the message for you, what I'm going to say tonight. So I just want to start off with that piece, that this is given in a context of a community and of a world where the predominant message for the last few decades has been the way to have a happy marriage is to be nice and to give into the other person. Happy wife, happy life, and Ishik Sheri Aisir Tzayin Baila. And these are really, again, the predominant message. And the struggle is that where this doesn't work is when it doesn't work. So where this doesn't work is in a few different areas that you can really map out. So one example is what happens if you're in a relationship with somebody, you're married to somebody, and you have a different shita of what's right and what's wrong. So maybe you believe that it's really important for the kids to be very sheltered, that they shouldn't read Gaisha books and they should only read Yiddish books. And what if your spouse believes that it's really, really important for the kids to have a broad education and them to be exposed to the world? And this is not a question of, I want more ice cream and you're going to take all the ice cream. I want something and you want it, and I want what's yummy for me and you want what's yummy. To the contrary, I'm not in this because I get anything out of it. I'm not in it because it does anything for me. I'm in it because I genuinely believe at the bottom of my heart that this is what's right for my children. I genuinely believe at the bottom of my heart that is the right thing for my children to be sheltered to this degree. And my spouse might believe from the bottom of their heart that it's best for the children to have this amount of exposure. Maybe they believe, you know, if you don't ever expose a child, then when they come into the real world, it ends up turning them upside down and they're not ready for it. So what do you do when the area of conflict between you and your spouse is not something about something I want or something that you want? It's something that I believe is right and wrong. What do you do then? How are you going to balance that? How are you going to say, okay, I'm just going to give in, I'm just going to be the vater? What if I believe that the right thing, the right way to parent children is you have to be strict? This generation, everybody's so, everything goes, all this unconditional love, shtusim, and you could just do whatever you want. There's no boundaries and kids need boundaries. And what if my spouse believes that the right way is to give unconditional love, and the children are only young once, and they should have the experience of being a carefree child? How do you resolve that? Do you just say, okay, I'm just going to be mevater, but one second, but you might believe that this is corrupting your children. It's doing the wrong thing for your children. So a lot of times you end up with conflicts in a relationship where it's not a question of what I want and what you want. It's a question of what is right and what's wrong. How could someone be mevater on that? How does that answer of Vatronis just answer that question? So that's like one example of a place where Vatronis doesn't necessarily solve your problem. Another domain where you might struggle if Vatranas is the only tool in your toolbox, is when you're dealing with something that really, really goes and cuts to the core of who you are. This is something that's really, really important to you. So let's say you're somebody who, for you, living in town, you can't function. You can't. You grew up out of town. The pashtus and the relaxed kite and the pace of life, all of it, the space, this is what gets your neshama going. And when you live in the city, you're mamish, you can't drive, you can't go around, you feel like everything's so dangerous, the sirens late at night, your pasha can't function. And what do you do if your spouse is somebody who, for them, adrab, to live out of town in the boondocks, I can't sleep unless there's sirens in the middle of the night. You know, I can't sleep unless I hear people running through the streets and making loud noises. I can't sleep. I can't live. I can't function unless there's at least 12 Frum grocery stores within the 1 mile radius of my house. I can't. I'm going to live in a place that has only 3 kosher grocery stores. I can't function. There's 1 shoe store. There's 2 shoe stores. What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to live? There's no people here. So what do you do if that is your tunas hanefesh? You didn't do anything to make yourself this way. This is how the Rebbeinu Shalom made you. Some people thrive in a big city. Some people thrive in a bustling place. And some people thrive at a much more relaxed pace, in a much more toned down place. Some people need to be the person that if they're not there, the community is not going to be the same. They need to be somebody who it's really important to have to be someone who's important in the community. When you, in certain communities, you live in the community, every single person counts. And for some people, they need the anonymity. They need the ability to blend in. Nobody should be looking at them. They shouldn't be such a big thing. They need to be able to not be home for 3 Shabbos and no one even chaps. So what do you do if your personality is one of these ways and your spouse is the other way? Are you just going to magically be able to change who you are? It's really difficult to change one midah. The Gedolim say is more difficult than learning half a shas. You're gonna change not just one midah. You're gonna change your whole personality. You're gonna become a different type of person in Gansan. What if you're super outgoing and a big extrovert and your spouse is a big introvert, right? And I'm sure this is very rare. I'm sure nobody on this listening right now has this experience. But what do you do if something like this happens? For an extrovert to become an introvert, that's not so poshut. And for an introvert to become an extrovert, not only is it not so poshut, it's probably not a good idea. That's how you get people who are dead, people who are not living based on the tunus, based on who the Rebbeinu Shalom made them. So what do you do if you and your spouse are just fundamentally different people? One of you is extremely logical and one of you is extremely emotional. Again, I'm sure this is a very rare circumstance. What do you do when this happens? What do you do if one spouse is struggling with mental illness or with trauma and the certain things that for them are too hard to do? And the other spouse cannot relate to these struggles at all, and the things that the spouse is asking them to do are things that for them are too difficult. What do you do if one spouse wants to, for them being able to live with a great kite and with a and don't worry about the money, have betachin, and for the other person, it's like you have to be careful, you have to save. There are some people that's so baked into their tchuna that for them, they'll never have enough money. They'll never be able to spend all the money they have. But the feeling of being irresponsible, it goes against, cuts against every grain in the body. So what do you do if you and your spouse are different in this way? Are you just going to be mevater? Are you going to stop being who you are? That's a very tall order. That doesn't work very well. And I think the third domain is, what do you do when there's a buildup of a lot of small things that build up one after another, after another, after another? So, you know, if you leave your shoes on the floor, it's not so bad, but when you leave your shoes on the floor, and then I asked you to put it away, and you left your shoes on the floor, and then you left your jacket on the table, and you left your hat on the table, and then you left your clothes out, and it's one thing after another, after another, after another, after another. You can be out there once, and twice, and 3 times, and 4 times, and 7 times, and 20 times. But after about the 475th time, it might start to wear on your nerves and you might not be able to pull it off anymore. So what do you do when you push it, can't do it anymore? And what happens is, for many people, is that they explode, is that they let it out. And you have what's famously called the exploding doormat. You have a person, they're a doormat, they're a doormat, they're a doormat, they're a doormat, and then they explode. And even if this person is not a doormat in many areas of life, sometimes the person is an exploding doormat in a specific domain. The wife is the exploding doormat when it comes to leaving his stuff around the house. The husband is the exploding doormat when it comes to leaving on time for family trips. It's one time he can be saved, another time he can be saved, another time he can be saved, but after the 57th time, he can't be saved. So what do you do when you end up being the exploding doormat? Is that the healthy way to do things? So these are all examples of where trying to be mevater all the time doesn't necessarily work so well. And what most people do is when this doesn't work is they double down. They say, you know what? I exploded. What I really need to do is I need to work on my vatronus. I got to get that vatronus a little more dialed in. And in essence, what you're doing, it's like you're saying, I took so much medicine that my stomach hurts. And I think the only solution is to take some more medicine to make the stomach ache go away. And really, the solution in all of these cases is to be able to learn a whole different tool that, again, that most of us aren't taught and is not spoken about very much. And that's the tool of being able to be yourself, to be able to be who you are instead of losing yourself, is to be able to be who you are. Now, being yourself doesn't mean that you walk up to your spouse and say, honey, the game's up, all right? Enough of the nice guy, it's over. It's time to meet the real me. That's not what this means. That's not what the tool is. It takes skill. It takes practice. It takes forethought. It takes planning. It's a lot easier to say, honey, whatever you want. We'll do whatever you want, dear. It's a lot more difficult to be able to stand up for yourself and do it in a way that's skillful, that doesn't blow everything up. So while on the one hand, you don't want to be walking on eggshells, on the other hand, you don't want to just go ahead and stomp them all with a big hammer right away. So you have to be able to understand, you have to be able to have tools to be able to recognize when is it appropriate to set boundaries, how do I set boundaries, and what does that look like? So I'm going to give you a very brief overview of some of these pieces. So the first thing is that before anything, you have to be able to define what are the issues that actually are eating you. And we put them into three categories. You can pick as many categories as you want, but we have three. One of them is things that are, to me, a hashkafa question, a question of a value question. The other group is a group of things that are so important to me that just part of who I am. And the last group is the group of things that keep building up one after another after another. Once you've been able to define these different areas, you have to decide what you want to do with them. So sometimes the answer is, I do want to be mevater. I want to give the other person something, v'lev shalem, as a gift, hold no grudges. I'm not going to write it down in my mental ledger. I'm giving it 100%. Sometimes the right answer is, I'm going to do this, not because I want to give someone a free gift. I'm doing this because I think it's a good strategic move. I think there's a decent chance that if I give in over here, that it will work out. Maybe if I go to my wife's parents for Shabbos with a smile, maybe she'll be extra nice to me over Shabbos. We'll find out. You're running an experiment. She doesn't owe me anything, but I might try. The third example of what you might do is you might do something where you say to the other person, listen, I'm happy to go. I'm willing to go, but I do want to let you know, I don't really like it there so much. It's not so enjoyable for me. Where you say how you feel about something, but at the same time, you're telling the other person, I'm still willing, b'lev shalom, to do what you wanted, to do it your way. And at the same time, I'm letting you know that the facts on the ground are, I don't enjoy this. A little more higher level of dealing with this is saying, hey, I'm leaving the decision up to you, but I'm asking you if we could please not go to your parents for Shabbos. And the last level, which is kind of like the most extreme level, is to say, hey, listen, I'm not going to your parents for Shabbos. I'm not coming. Now, in that example, it's a little more extreme. But in other examples, it's not so extreme. So, for example, your spouse wants you to speak more strictly to the children, and you think you should be more gentle. You might say to your spouse, I'm going to speak more strictly, but I want to let you know I don't think it's the right thing. You might say, hey, listen, I'm asking you, I'm leaving the decision up to you, but I'm asking you if it's okay with you if I speak more gently. Or you might say, listen, I understand that you want me to speak more strictly, but I think this is the right thing. I'm going to speak more gently. So these are different levels of setting boundaries. It's a level of setting boundary of telling someone how you feel. There's a level of setting a boundary of leaving the decision up to the other person, but requesting explicitly that they do what you want. And then there's a level of setting a boundary saying, I'm going to do what I think I should be doing, or what I believe is right, or what I would like to do, whether you like it or not, which obviously I can't do this in all cases. I can't force my spouse to speak a certain way. And then once you know where you want to set your boundaries and what level of boundaries, then there's a question of how you communicate those boundaries. And in order to communicate those boundaries, it's really important to do it in a way, and I think that maybe some of the questions that we'll get will touch on this, but it's really important to do it in a way that's respectful, that's kind, that involves validating and understanding your spouse's point of view and letting them know that we're not here to arbitrate or discuss or fight about what's right and wrong. We're only here to talk about this is what you feel, this is what I feel. Now, based on what I feel, I might do something or I might request something. Based on what you feel, you might do something, you might request something. We are not here to fight about and discuss and try to postulate who's right and who's wrong. That's the easy way out, which doesn't work. We're here to recognize that there's two different people over here with two different points of view, and we have to work along with that. So I'll take that as the hakdama, so to speak. And now I think, we'll take some questions, which might flesh out a little about of what we're talking about. Maybe people ask about specific scenarios and we can kind of dig into this a little more.
Okay. Mr. Kleiman, that was a beautiful opening. I think you opened like Pandora's box. I can see from the texts that are coming in. Again, if anybody wants to ask a question, please text Asher Parnas over here. Remember, live questions go first. As we understand the preface, anytime we talk about Shalom Bayis, we understand it's not about you, it's about your neighbor, so you don't even have to preface that. We know that. Not even a problem. And, we're here to really accomplish. Obviously, I can see Rabbi Kleiman is from the best of the best, so let's take advantage of him and ask him the questions. We're gonna do a two-question poll, and everybody answer to the best of your ability. It's anonymous. We just wanna get a feeling from the crowd. These are the two questions. How comfortable are you with setting boundaries in your relationship? Four possible answers. Very comfortable. I communicate my boundaries openly and I feel confident they are respected. Number two, somewhat comfortable. I set boundaries, but sometimes find it hard to express them fully or worry about my partner's reaction. Number three, neutral. I feel okay with boundaries, but don't always think about them or discuss them actively with my partner. Or number four, very uncomfortable. I avoid setting boundaries because I feel guilty, fear, conflict, or I'm unsure how to communicate them. So those are the four options. Please option answer what describes your scenario the best. And let's go to the second question. Which area is the most difficult for you to set boundaries in your relationship? So let's say for the people that could set boundaries, even if it's a struggle, but which is that boundary which you're having difficulty with? Is it time and personal space? Balancing time for myself versus time for my partner? Emotional needs, expressing my emotional limits and when I need support or space. Number three, communication, setting boundaries around how, when, and how often we communicate. Financial decisions, which is a big topic in itself, setting boundaries about how, when, and how often we can, financial is discussing spending habits, budgeting, and shared financial responsibilities. Anytime that's a topic that you'd like to stay away from. Or the fifth choice, physical affection and intimacy, communicating about comfort levels, about personal boundaries around physical closenesses. So those are the poll questions. Everybody please answer. Okay, now about 5 seconds, we're going to end the poll, and then Rabbi Yisrael, we're going to review it, and we'll discuss it, and then we'll go into, again, anybody who wants to ask live questions. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Setting the boundary, I'm ending the poll now. Okay, these are the results. How comfortable are you with setting boundaries in your relationship? Rabbi Yisrael, listen to this, very interesting. 20% very comfortable. 44% of people somewhat comfortable. I set boundaries, but sometimes find it hard to express them fully without worrying about my partner's reaction. 17% is neutral. I'm okay with boundaries, but don't always think about them or discuss them actively. 90% are very uncomfortable. I avoid setting boundaries because I feel guilty, fear, conflict, and I'm unsure how to communicate it. So if you take the two questions, if you take basically the bottom half, somewhat comfortable, neutral, and very uncomfortable, it seems like most people by far have this issue for whatever the reason is. Charlie, any comment on this or you want to go to the second poll?
Yeah, I think this is, you know, you always get your 20-20-80 split, right? Your 20-20-60 split. You get 20 on one end of the spectrum, 20 on the other end of the spectrum, and everybody else in the middle. So you have 20% over here very comfortable, 20% very uncomfortable, and everybody else is right in the middle. So this is... it's very illuminating and very I would say, and pretty much, very much what you'd expect with something like this. You know, I think it's I think it shows through a very well-written poll that you actually captured the reality of what goes on out there in the world. You know?
Now, this is the interesting part. Which area is the most difficult for you to set boundaries in your relationship? 11% of people, time and space. 40%, the number one answer by far is emotional needs, expressing my emotional limits and when I need support or space. That seems the biggest struggle. Communication is 10%, financial decision is 18%, and the physical attention and intimacy, communicating comfort levels and boundaries, 20%. And so basically, financial decisions, physical intimacy and affection, and emotional needs seem to be like the top three answers.
Those are the big three. Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, this makes sense. You know, this definitely makes sense. This is emotional needs really kind of touch to the core of the relationship itself. How do I feel about you? How do you feel about me? How do I feel about myself? And how are you there for me when that happens? So that really touches to the core of the relationship and physical affection, intimacy as well. And financial decisions, again, are one of the very, very big, it's one of the very big pieces that you see coming up a lot of times when it comes to conflict and different styles. Because again, a lot of times financial decisions aren't just about what I want and what you want. It's not about, hey, who's more selfish here? It's about what do I think is the right thing? Or what I think is the wrong thing. And a lot of times people struggle with that. You know, there's no easy way out when it comes to those types of things.
Okay. I guess we're going to go to live questions again. If anybody wants to ask a live question, now is the time. And text me over here. And 1 second, I want to see. I have one person over here that wanted to ask. 1 second, Rabbi Strong. Okay. I'm going to go to the first question. Somebody sent a question as a wife, as a devoted wife. A wife is to do whatever the husband wants, no matter, right? They taught us always in school, or Tzolim Bala. I don't even understand tonight's topic because nice that we're brought up is that a wife is always doing the rutzen of her husband. So what does this mean? The concept of boundaries and what I need, what he needs. So I'm having a hard time understanding even the topic.
Okay. That's a really good question. I would say that if the questioner finds that she does Ritzayin Baila and it's working out for them, and to the contrary, they have a great flourishing relationship and she feels very happy and he feels very happy and they're getting along together, then Matoiv Manoim. And I genuinely mean this, like Matoiv Manoim. There's no mitzvah to set boundaries today. There's no mitzvah in the Torah that says set boundaries. It's no 11th commandment. At the same time, the reality is that many women following this same approach of Ishik Sher Eiser Tzayin Baila, unfortunately find themselves being an Ishik Sher for quite some time and then being very not Ksher when it all builds up and they can't keep it in anymore. And they end up criticizing their spouse, yelling at their spouse, treating their spouses very poorly, getting angry, getting frustrated, giving them the silent treatment, turning away from them, feeling anxious, feeling depressed, feeling sad, feeling hurt, feeling distant. Unfortunately, that's the reality for a lot of people. So it's lovely to have an idea, and if the idea is working for you, then matoiv manoim. The question is, what do you do when it's not working? Like, what should you do about it? So I think it was Einstein who said, you know, if you keep the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So if, again, if you're being an Ishik Sher Eiser Tzayin Baila and your marriage is flourishing, you have emotional closeness, you find yourself acting in ways that you're happy about, your house looks the way that you'd like it to look, and things are mamish rosy, then keep it up. However, if you find yourself trying to be an Ishik Sher, and after a while all the resentment builds up and then it spills out in one very long tirade of, and then you did this, and then you did that, and then when that happened, this happened, and this happened, that happened, or you find yourself being critical, or cold, or distant, or nasty, or contemptuous, if you find these things happening to you, then it looks like you might be better served by adding a balance to that. So I'm not here to say anything of hashkafic import. My brother is a very chashev rav, my father is a very chashev rav, I am not a rav. I am just, despite the fact that our school wrote rabbi on the book, I'm not a rov. I'm not a poisek. I'm not here to paskin. I'm not here to serve as anybody's rov. I'm only here to act as a pragmatist, to ask you one question. Is it working? If it's working, keep it up. If it's not, then something else might be useful to you.
What I would add is many times the husband would want to hear her opinion. You know, she thinks whatever you say, whatever you want, you know, whatever, you know, I don't have any of my own. And even if everything is working out, sometimes he might say, wait a second, you know, you're amazing. You're doing everything I want, but I want to hear you, you know, where are you? We want to have a relationship here. So if it's working, you can take it to the next level. It's possible that you might be scared, you know, being vulnerable. We're going to talk a lot about being vulnerable tonight, especially if you feel you can't because your spouse might not take it the right way. But it's something to think about. Where are you in this relationship while you're doing everything for him?
It's a very, 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 very powerful point. Absolutely. Very, very powerful point. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. You know,
think about it.
Yeah, many people, or most people, want to be in a relationship with another person. They don't want to be in a relationship with a clone or a mirror image of themselves. You know, it's usually not necessarily a good sign if someone can't tolerate or isn't interested in someone who has any other opinion other than themselves or has any day or any world other than themselves. So, absolutely. So, you know, again, part of if it's working out for you, wasn't just if you're not fighting and you're not plotting. Is it working out for you that you have an emotionally close relationship, that you're connecting, that you're really connecting? And sometimes inside of this approach, there's a tremendous disconnect, a tremendous lack of connection, because one of the people just isn't showing up in the relationship at all. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a very, very powerful point. Thank you.
Here's Israel, let's go to the first live question.
Okay.
Hello, my name's Maxine. Thanks for the shiur. I am curious because my husband grew up with a very ill father and spent many, many hours in the hospital and obviously has quite a difficult relationship to hospitals. But on Saturday night, I was experiencing a lot of pain and I needed to go to the emergency department and I was a little confronted and surprised because he did not offer to drive me there. I drove myself to the hospital. And I guess with that, he's always been a very supportive husband, but I was very confronted by this and the fact that it wasn't a gesture that he would automatically do. And neither did I ask him to drive me. So I was just curious about how I could address this and get him to reflect on his character and, the behavior that he chose.
Okay. So first of all, are you okay?
Yeah. I'm fine. Thank you so much. Okay, thanks for that. I'm back home. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So first of all, it's incredibly painful when you're in a situation where you're very vulnerable. You need to go to the hospital because you're in pain. And the person who you expect to be the person who's there to be a lifeline, they're the one who's supposed to take care of you. It's like, you know, me and you against the world.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden they're missing in action. So that's an incredibly painful emotional experience. And I'm struck that despite having such an experience, you were able to say two things, which really struck me. You were able to say, hey, I know that he had this growing up with his father and it was really difficult for him. And you have the ability to kind of look at his perspective and see what he's experiencing. And then he said something else, which was very charitable. He said that he's really generally very supportive of him.
Yeah.
So I just straight off the bat, I want to give you a lot of credit that despite having experienced something, which can be very, very painful, emotionally, you are able to see and still have the enough space inside of you, so to speak, to look at him in a very charitable way and say, well, he's had these experiences growing up and he's generally very supportive. So I just want to say that like you're way ahead of the game over here, you know? Right? This is, you know, that's really helpful because it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm going to guess and you'll tell me if I'm wrong. I guess maybe I'm a little puzzled. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be obvious. And again, so there must be something I'm missing here to say, hey, listen, you know, I know that you had a really rough experience growing up and that I wonder if you have a tremendous aversion or a fear and anxiety around the hospitals. And the truth is you're really, really supportive of me all the time. So I'm kind of wondering what happened Friday night. Like, what was going on for you? I guess I'm kind of wondering
if that's the first conversation
and what would happen over there in that conversation. Mm.
Yeah, it's good for me to remain curious about that. I think that's some spot on. Thank you. That's really clarifying.
Because it is quite kind of puzzling, right?
You know,
what did happen, right? And I wonder again if that conversation, if you're coming from a place of validating him, which I don't have to tell you to do because you did it on your own, unprompted, then that's not going to be a very threatening conversation for him. When you're leading with, hey, I know where you're coming from. I know that you're a good guy. I know you love me. I know you're there for me. So what happened? And it was really painful for me, you know, and hey, I'm not even saying that you were in a place that you could have done that. Maybe it was too hard for you, but let's talk about this. Okay. Is that useful?
Yeah, that's really useful. Yeah. It's good. Good conversation starter. Thank you.
Okay. You're very welcome. You gave it, you know, you made it a little easy. You gave me those pieces.
Thank you.
Okay.
We have a lot of questions over here. Let's see over here. Let's see this. Hannah Roch, you want to mute? Okay. Let's go to this next one. Hi.
Hi. I hope my question is going to come out clear because I feel like it's pretty layered. Firstly, to start off, the three categories that you divided, the areas where, like, the areas of conflict. So I don't know if you were sarcastic when you were saying introvert, extrovert, different values. But, like,
I was. I apologize that I didn't mark that out clearly enough. I was making a joke, as it were, that, you know, hey, this is not a common thing, but it is extraordinarily common. Yeah.
Right.
So thank you for bringing that up.
Because, I very much, like, I mean, in every single area, in the values and in the core natures and in the build-up, like, I have a lot of checks in all those areas. So I guess I'm just going to try to keep my question as specific as I could. So just like a recent situation, like, I have, like, certain things that, like, I want to do or, like, I would want for myself. And then I tell my husband about it. Like, I'll say, this is what I want to do or whatever. And at this point, in the beginning, he would say no or whatever. I would just right away give in. But at this point, like, I've realized, I've come to the realization that it's not the right thing for me to do. And so I'll say, like, I want to buy this or I want to do this. And I know it's, again, a little, kind of like goes a little bit against his nature or his values. So he'll say, like, he'll tell me, like, hey, look, do what you want, like, X, Y, and Z, but do what you want. And it feels so disconnecting and so, like, guilt-tripping and so not, like, I'm trying to understand how when setting boundaries and you don't want to create all that distance all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just one scenario and it's constant. Like, I'm saying, I can give, like, another silly example, like, where he asked me if I would want to do something with him and it was actually late at night or I don't remember exactly. I didn't want to. I told him, like, that I don't really feel like you really want, I'll do it for you. It's like, okay, I said what I want and now you decide. And it's like, he threw it right back at me and I'm like, okay, I'll do it. But like, I was like resentful the whole time. It's like, I didn't even know if it was worth it. Like.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to just give me a moment. Let me kind of take this in. Okay. So it sounds like you're saying that first of all, in all three domains, that you kind of find yourself checking some of these boxes, values, things that are really important to you and kind of like the build up. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sounds like you're saying that, hey, I used to always kind of give in and now I push back. But at the same time, I feel like in the pushback that he'll kind of say like, I've said my piece. Now you kind of do what you want. And you kind of feel like that creates a certain sense of distance. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
because
like,
I know he doesn't want me to do it, but at this point he feels like, hey, I can't keep controlling you forever. And he knows like I'm upset about it. So like, hey, like do what you want. So it doesn't feel like, you know, it shouldn't be this way.
It doesn't feel like.
It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel connecting. It doesn't feel
respect
to anyone.
Okay.
So, phase of control, it sounds like they're doing the boundary thing, but instead of it being with respect and growing to closeness, it's more like, okay, so like, we'll do our boundary thing, but you stay on the other side of the fence.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm hearing that. What I want to ask you specifically is, what would an ideal response look like for you? Like, if you said to your husband, I want to buy XYZ, and he doesn't believe that it's the right thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he recognizes that, listen, he's a person, you're a person. You know,
I missed the exam he said. What?
Like, what do you wish he would say if you ask him, you say, I want to buy something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that he feels like it's not the right thing to buy. You know, it's not the right thing to spend the money on that. Okay. But at the same time, he recognizes that he's not the dictator over here. You're also a person and you feel like you should buy it. And like, it doesn't feel like it's right for him to necessarily impose his point of view here. So what would you like him to do in a sense? Do I still have you over here?
Yeah. I'm just thinking.
Okay, that's good. Okay, no, keep thinking. No, Scooter. Didn't want to stop there.
Yes. I guess probably what came up was the validation before he goes to, whatever. I wanted to buy something that he didn't want to spend the money on, and I specifically said where I'm taking, like, I took on an extra side job, and I'm like, I'll pay with it with this money. Mm-hmm. I felt like side job was what I specifically wanted to pay for this, and I would feel like he should validate that. Like, I understand, I know where, like, things are a bit tight and we have, like, expenses, but, you know, you exerted yourself and you put in the extra effort, so you deserve it now. Like, okay. I think he should have been able to see that, my perspective, and be able to validate that.
Okay. You wanted him to validate you, or you wanted him to agree with you? Because there's a difference, right? Validate means, hey, I don't agree. I hear where you're coming from. I understand your perspective, but I don't necessarily agree with you. Or do you want him to agree with you?
Well, he doesn't. He could have his own opinions. He could think that my side job should pay for the groceries. He's allowed to think that, but I don't think so. So I don't want him to see my perspective.
Okay, great. So then you're in a good spot. Okay. So you're saying that, hey, listen, I don't need him to agree with me. I'm not saying to my husband, you have to say to me, hey, honey, you're 100% right. You know what? I'm wrong. Now I see the truth in the light. That's not even what you want. What you rather want him, you rather want him to say, hey, listen, I hear where you're coming from. I can understand that you should feel this way. It makes sense to me that a person would see it this way. I personally disagree, but I can understand where you're coming from. Am I correct about that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now that we've identified what you want over here, so now you can have a conversation with him about it. So I wonder what it would be like if you had a conversation with him and you said, hey, listen, you know, sometimes I ask you something where you don't necessarily agree with where I'm coming from. Like, you disagree with, you know, I wanted to buy that thing and you thought we shouldn't. And for me, it's really important that I feel like, even if you disagree with me, that you see my perspective, that you kind of hear where I'm coming from. Now, maybe sometimes I say something and you don't see my perspective at all. You just genuinely think I'm off the wall and you cannot fathom how any rational human being in the entire existence of humanity could think this way. Maybe. Granted. However, in the cases where I say something and you could hear that even if you disagree with it, someone could feel that way and it could make sense to somebody, I would really, really appreciate it if you could say that to me. You could still say I disagree. You could still let me know that you don't agree with me. You could still let me know that you don't think I'm right and you don't think we should do it this way. And at the same time, I would be really comforted if you can let me know that you kind of see my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How does that feel to you? Does that feel like a conversation you can have, or is it like, come on, this is ridiculous?
I'm not so sure, but it's a good start.
What's that?
I said I'm not sure where that would go, but it's a good start at least, a good direction.
Okay. Okay. I wonder if in the conversation about the thing you wanted to buy, if you could have said that. I wonder if the next time it happens, you can say, you know, so you say, hey, you know, I want to buy XYZ, right? And he says, well, I don't agree, but do what you want, right? And you say, first of all, thank you very much for saying that I could buy it. I appreciate that. And I understand that you don't agree, I hear that loud and clear that you don't agree. And you know what? If you disagree with me, then that's fine. That's cool. You don't have to agree with me. I don't expect you to agree with me. Like I'm fine with you having your opinion. I want to know, I'm curious, if you disagree with me and you think I'm wrong, but you can kind of hear that I would think this way, or you think that like my position is like ridiculous and absolutely unreasonable and no rational human being would think that way. I wonder what does that sound like something like a kind of a sentence you could string or paragraph you could string together?
Try.
Okay. What do you think might happen if you tried that?
Tell you the honest truth, I didn't even do it in a conversation. I did it in a text message. The conversation overwhelmed.
Okay. Okay. I got it. Okay. So again,
Generation Z.
Yeah, I wonder if a conversation about the conversation would be a good idea, right? Which would allow you to set up a space and say, hey, listen, before we kind of get into who's right and who's wrong, can I take a moment to let you know that I kind of hear where you're coming from? Like, you know, money's tight or, you know, our values are XYZ. Now I'm wondering if you can kind of hear where I'm coming from. Before we get into who's right and who's wrong, what we'll do, I feel a lot more comfortable when I know that I kind of hear where you're coming from and you kind of hear where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay. Give it a shot. All right. Let us know what happens.
There's many, many people sitting here listening to the conversation, they're thinking, why doesn't he get it by himself? If I have to bring up this conversation, it sounds like so childish.
If you loved me, if I want to buy it,
obviously that means I want it. And if
Menachem, if you loved me, you would know that next Sunday night was a better week for me. You wouldn't have scheduled me this week. I know I didn't tell you that, but if you loved me and cared about me, you would have known that about me, right?
Okay.
So, That's something that there's a significant amount of people who feel that way. And to be honest with you, I hear where they're coming from, right? I mean, there's definitely a level of geschmack and yumminess and taken care of that we feel when someone does that. You know, this is what Hashem does for us. Hashem gives us what we need. Terem ekrav ani ena. Hashem gives us things without us even asking for them. And there's a tremendous, tremendous feeling of being loved and cared for and cherished and thought about when someone is able to show up and do the thing for you that you wanted and you never even had to tell them. There's even a darga of someone does something for you and you didn't even know you wanted it until they did it. And then you're like, actually, they know me better than I know myself. So the feeling that you get when someone does that, the geschmack, the emotional geschmack and the feeling of closeness is absolutely tremendous.
Well, I want to bring out that part
that
we want it. And when we don't have it, it brings up the emotions inside of us. And then we sit with the expectation. Let's wait another 2 minutes. Maybe he'll get it. Maybe let's wait and wait.
Maybe he'll wake up. Let's wait another 20 years. Maybe the first emotion, 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Instead of having a simple open communication, that might be hard because I don't want that. I want them to get it.
I want them to know. Yeah. And this is where the statement, the very famous saying, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good shows up, right? Yes. Would the perfect thing be if the other person could read my mind? That would be absolutely incredible, you know? And if it hasn't happened and it's been 5 minutes or 5 days or 5 months or 5 years or 5 decades, at a certain point, you might want to cut your losses and say, let's go for plan B. You know, let's go for plan B. So I definitely understand why people want this and why people love this and why people would like this. And in a lot of relationships where there's open communication, this happens as well. To the contrary, sometimes open communication fosters this. You see, because if I tell my spouse that I really love gifts and I told them this 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, by the 8th time, they might actually intuit it and they might chat by themselves and do it without me asking and I'll get this feeling. So this does happen. And even in relationships where there's open communication, you get chaptized when the other person does the thing that you want without you asking for it, and it feels incredible. But it makes sense that people want this all the time. The only problem is that, you know, there's the perfect and the good, and we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And unfortunately, most people are not mind readers. That's why Hashem made us. I'm like, you know, they can't read. Sometimes they can. Sometimes we can read other people's minds and emotions, but very often we can't, you know, especially when it's something that doesn't resonate with us, like something that we don't really, doesn't click with us in our personality. It's very, very, very hard to be able to intuitively sense that this is what the other person needs. It's kind of like, who would want that? Like, which Meshuggah would want that? The Meshuggah is your spouse. It's very hard to intuit that. As intuitive as the person you might be, but it's so far away from your personal experience. It's really hard. Even sometimes the other person says it. I tell people a lot of times, I say, I know, they say, I've said it. I've said it so many times. I say, I know you, I think you're going to have to say it a whole bunch more. Because when someone tells you something that doesn't make sense to you, you forget it very, very quickly. It's a very interesting thing. Someone tells you something and it doesn't click with how you understand the world. It's like a week later, it's like no one ever said anything. It's completely gone. It's off your radar. It's like, really? She really, 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 she actually likes gifts? I mean, the gifts are so ridiculous. If you want something, go buy. Really? Are you talking? He really likes compliments? What? Why? What does a kiffy know? You did a good job. What do you need me to tell you? Are you talking? And even if the person said it 100 times, I'd say it another 100 times. Because when something doesn't stim with you, it's like it slides off the table. It's like you put something that's very slippery on a table and like one nudge and it's gone. You have to keep putting it back on the table. Keep putting it back on the table. That's how it works. That's how people work.
Hey, Maridik. Let's go to the next question.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much. Okay. My question is more about when your spouse, let's say, is not emotionally or mentally, or struggles emotionally and mentally, I should say. And they tell your child things that are really not good for their chinuch, and you have to contradict them. So I'm just going to give an example that happened just the other day. My son needed to go to Ma'ariv Minyan. My husband was too tired or too depressed to take him. And said, just don't daven with a minyan tonight. So I have to step in and like, he needs to daven with a minyan. You know, like he's young and let's not get him into that, but it doesn't only come up with that type of stuff specifically. It could come up with many, many, many areas of chinuch. And I am constantly having to set those boundaries and having to contradict what my spouse says. We have talked about it, and he agrees, oh, I shouldn't do that. I know I really shouldn't do it. But when it comes to the moment, it just happens constantly. So I don't know what suggestions you might have to offer.
Okay, so yeah. So first of all, that's a really rough, that's a very, very difficult situation. It's very difficult. You want to present a unified front when it comes to chinuch. And you kind of feel like you have a gun to your head. Like, what am I going to let my son get the message that you don't have to down with the minion? Like, that's unacceptable. So you're very much stuck between a rock and a hard place. Like, on the one hand, you don't want to contradict your husband to your child. And on the other hand, you can't let this message fly without a response. The first piece I'll say is that there's a very large, I think the hardest part of this question is more of a chinuch question than a shalom bayis question. So I'm going to like punt on part of the question. And I would say, really have to speak to someone who's an expert in chinuch and someone who's an expert in very difficult chinuch type of questions like this. This is a really, really thorny chinuch question. So I'm going to punt on part of the question, right? At which point do I prioritize from a chinuch perspective, not from a shalom bayis perspective, from a chinuch perspective, showing a unified front to my child versus having to make sure that certain message XYZ gets through them. So that's the first thing. I'm not coming as an expert in chinuch here, so I'm going to punt on that part of the question. On the shalom bayis piece of the question, however, is your husband reacting poorly when you do that? Is he upset when you're doing that? Or it's the contrary. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, he's agreed to you that he shouldn't do that. He kind of did it. And like when you kind of come in and contradict him, he's like, yeah, whatever, that's fine. Or are you getting shalom bayis pushback here?
Oh, so it really depends on the situation. For that situation, he realized he was wrong. In a situation, I guess, where he realizes he really is being wrong, he isn't as upset. I mean, he doesn't want me to contradict him in front of my children. In a situation where there have been times where he has been extremely mad at me for allowing my child, for doing what I felt was the best thing for my child, even though he said not to do something and it was really the best thing for my child to do something, and he's been really, really angry about it.
Okay, and he was angry because he felt that he was right, that you're wrong, or he was angry even though
he was angry. How could you tell him to do something that I told him not to do? Like, that are that I like who tells their kid not to listen to their father. Like it created a really big like resentment. Like what's wrong with you? You know?
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Okay. So the first piece here, again, there's a chinuch question, which you have to ask to somebody who's an expert in chinuch, who's someone who has big places, not like your next door neighbor. This is somebody who you have to ask to somebody who's an expert in chinuch. This is a very, very, very difficult question. You have to really present these scenarios one at a time and say, you know, and in this scenario, what am I doing? And in this scenario, what am I doing? And maybe certain scenarios, they'll say, leave it alone. You know what I mean? You shouldn't do that. Maybe certain situations will say, no, you know, you should do that. So that's where I would start with, you know, that there's, you have a very difficult, thorny chinuch question, which has to be asked to somebody who's a bar samcha and a chacham, and I am not that person. So I just want to start with that. I think that once you've done that, once you've asked that question and you have clarity from someone who you can trust onto what the right move to do is, that's when you can have a conversation with your husband and you could say, listen, you know, I've asked, you know, and by the way, if your husband agrees to ask the question together with you, then matayv manayv, if you both can listen to somebody together, that's great.
If not happening.
Okay. If he's not going to ask to somebody, then you're going to say, listen, you know, here's the story. You know, I understand that, you know, you feel very strongly about A, B, C, D, F, G. On the other hand, I feel very strongly about this question the other way. And I respect the fact that you feel that way. I understand that you feel that way. I understand your perspective. And at the same time, while I understand your perspective, I have a different perspective. And I'm not here to try to put you down or contradict you or disrespect you. I'm doing something that I feel I have to do what's right for my child. And by the way, just because I feel this is right for my child doesn't mean that I am right and that this is the right thing for my child. It's only what I believe is right. Just because I believe it's right doesn't mean it is right. And in addition, I went and I asked Rabbi Pliny or Rebbetzin Pliny or whoever Pliny, and I was miyayitz with them, and they said, when it comes to this, I should do this. When it comes to this, again, and I'm not saying that they're right. I'm not saying that they're Hashem. I'm not saying that you have to trust what they say or agree with what they say. That is not what I'm saying. I'm only saying that for me, I don't have a choice because I have to do what I feel is right when it comes to my child. I have to do what I feel is right. Just like you feel like you have to do what is right, it would be wrong for you to do what you feel is wrong for your child. I have to do what I feel is right, and I have to do what I feel is right based on who I spoke to and who I trust and what they, and what they've been meaning to me is right. And I think that I have to do that because it's just the right thing. Mm-hmm. So this conversation is not a conversation of you trying to prove him wrong. It's not a conversation of you trying to get him to agree with you because it's never going to happen. That would be the dream scenario, you know, if you just lay down the facts and he would wake up and chat like, hey, 1 second, I'm a fool over here. My wife's got it right. I gotta take some impulse control work, so I shouldn't say these foolish things. Shouldn't say narisha stuff to the kids. I should shut it down and put her in charge. That would be great, you know. But that's not gonna happen. You know it's not gonna happen. I know it's not gonna happen. So again, let's not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. The good in this case, which is not perfect, is you coming and saying, I understand your point of view. And I understand where you're coming from, and I understand why you're doing what you're doing. And if I was in your shoes, I'd probably do what you're doing too. And I feel the other way, and I've been miyayitz the other way, and I, in good conscience, have no choice but to follow the das that I have over here. So what this conversation does, it doesn't make you best friends, and he's not going to be happy, he's not going to like this, and it's not going to feel all warm and yummy. And at the same time, it's the good here. This is the best you can do out of a really, really rough situation. By laying down, I'm not trying to convince you that you're wrong. I'm not trying to convince you that I'm right. I'm not here to say that I know the right answers. I'm not even here to say that the people who I asked for the Das Torah asked the right. Because if you don't agree with that, who am I to claim that objectively I'm right and you're wrong? And at the same time, and this is not personal, I'm not here to get you. I'm not to contradict you. I wish nothing more in the world than I wish I would feel the same way that you feel about these things. And I wish that when you tell Shloimi, no, he can't. I wish that I would hold that way in Shitas Chinuch and that my Rabbein would tell me that and that I would want to do that because that would be great because I respect you and I care for you and I love you and I want to be able to be on your side and back you up and look at the kids and say, this is what Tati said, Kol Tov. And at the same time, unfortunately, I'm stuck. I'm stuck. I don't have a choice. So this is not great. It's not perfect. We're not going to solve the whole world. What we're going to reach, hopefully, is after doing this enough times, it's not going to be terribly shocking for him when this happens, and you'll be able to take out some of the fighting of it, the personal animosity of it, the disrespect of it, by letting him know that you respect him and you wish this wasn't going on, and you push it up gun together, you have no choice.
Okay, can I ask you on the timing for this? Because I don't feel it's good to have the conversation while he's in the middle of being angry.
Spot on. Correct. Your instincts are bang on open, right?
But he has even angrier when I say I think we should discuss it later.
Yes. So you know your husband better than anybody, most likely. There are some people who there's a good time to talk about it with them, and there are some people where there's never a good time to talk about it with them. So if there's never a good time to talk about it with him, then guess what? You're going to talk to him at a time when it's not a good time to talk about it. And that's all there is to it. There's just no solution to that. We can't, unfortunately, manufacture a good time if he's the type of person that this conversation is never going to be a good time. However, if there is a good time or there's a not as bad of a time, then it's probably useful to try to seize that time. And it's probably useful, again, to walk into the conversation, and you want to buffer it with a lot of lubricant. You want to, you know, you want to add a lot of springs over here. When you drive on a road with a lot of potholes, you want to make sure your car has good shocks. So the shocks don't fix everything. They don't make the potholes go away. They won't make it that your tire won't get a flat, but they can make the ride a little less bump. So you want to try to temper this and do it genuinely. Like, genuinely, I love you. I care about you. I respect you. I wish that I would believe the same way you believe, because I want to be on the same page as you. This is not fun for me. This is miserable. This is terrible. I hate it when this happens. I'm stuck. I have a gun to my head. And then back to, and I love you, and I respect you, and I care for you, and I wish I could be on the same page. Is that helpful at all?
Definitely helpful. I just, it's hard to get that, like, I love you, respect you conversation flowing when you're dealing with this.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's difficult, and it's gonna require you to kind of dig down a bit, right? What was it like when you were dating? What was it like when you first got married? What was it like? When are the times when you look at him and you're like, okay, you know, wow, that's my husband. That's great. I'm so proud of him. I'm so happy I married him. You did marry the guy. So at a certain point, you felt that way. You felt that way about certain traits of his, you felt a certain way about him as a person, or certain things he did. So dig into that. Take a moment to think about that, to focus on that, and to connect with that. So that when you come into the conversation, you're coming to the conversation from a place of, this is someone who I love. This is someone who I respect. This is someone who I care about. Or maybe I don't love them today or respect them today or care about them so much today. But this is a person that there was a point where I felt this way about them, or there are parts about them that I feel this way, or parts of me feel parts of them about this way, right? We can kind of, right? If we come in with as much of that as you can muster, I don't know how much you can muster. I don't know what your relationship was like. But if you come in with that as much as you can muster, that will hopefully be somewhat of a shock to the conversation, a lubricant. But again, this does not mean that it's going to go well. You know, he might get really angry, and he might storm out of the room, and you might have to go back and do this a few times, and you might have to have a conversation about having the conversation. You know, hey, I want to talk to you about what happens when we discuss difficult topics. You know, sometimes when we discuss difficult topics, you raise your voice, you walk out of the room, and you call me names. Last time you said, I'm stupid, and I'm just like my mother, and I'll never understand. And I want to tell you that when you do that, it's really hurtful for me. And I really, really wish that we could have a conversation, that we both stay calm and that's productive, that even if it's a conversation that's uncomfortable for me and uncomfortable for you, we can have it together without calling names or without getting heated. So there might be a lot of work for you. Again, I don't know your relationship, but there might be work for you to have a conversation about the conversation and to make sure that whatever conversations you're having are coming in with a tremendous amount of lubricant, a tremendous amount of buffer, tremendous amount of social skills. You know, you come to the store and you want to tell them, I really need to return this outfit because it's quite frankly disgusting and the quality is terrible. That's not what you say. You say, listen, I do have to say that maybe the quality wasn't so up to par. You know, I would maybe perhaps expect something a little better. But if they push back and say, we're not taking the return, you hang in there. You're like, really the quality is not something I could accept. So you're going to return that dress no matter what because it was defective, but you're not going to look there and say, I could have gotten something 10 times better on AliExpress. Are you people crazy? You charged me $500 for this. So you want to bring a lot of social and emotional lubricant in the conversation as much as you can, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be a yummy, fun, easy, wonderful, comfortable conversation. That's for sure. That I can tell you for sure. Okay. So
okay, thank you.
I hope that answer was incredibly unsatisfying, because it's not. There are no perfect answers to these questions. It's more about, let's not let the enemy be perfect, be the enemy of the good, and let's not let the good be the enemy of not as bad as it could have been, you know? So sometimes the best you can do is not as bad as it could have been, which is really, really helpful when you're stuck a lot of times. It's because the right answer is an answer that's bad, just not terrible. And you don't want to go there because it's bad, but that's really the right way to go. Is that okay?
Some people are stepping on eggshells and just trying to figure out how to have that conversation. So
yes. And when you're stepping,
reach out to you to help them out, maybe come up with a script, but sometimes it's not so easy.
No, it's a lot of times very difficult. A lot of times very difficult, and some people are very emotionally volatile, and they blow up and they explode and they start, you know. And again, I wrote a book about this. There's some scripts in there. There's some examples. And there's not just examples of everything working out very nicely. You know, like I have in the book a lot of examples of a conversation and it works out great. But then in the next chapter, I say, but what if it didn't work out great? What if the husband escalated and started calling the wife names? Now what does she do? So it kind of walks you through a little mikala l'kavod from the easy cases to the more difficult ones. So that's amazing. I try to give a range.
Okay. So here's a question somebody sent in. I find cell phones in our marriage to be complex and confusing issue. Sometimes I feel like I'm in my own world. I use my phone like everyone else, but my wife often says I'm ignoring her and goes about very derogatory manner of saying it, which leads me to apologize and try to move on. However, when she gets in a call or is focused on something on her phone, she seems to get just as absorbed. When I try to point out that she's doing the same thing, she insists it's different. I'm not sure how to handle what feels like a double standard here.
That's a multi-layered question. Good question. It's a multi-layered question. There's a few points to address over here. And I think that one of them, I'm just going to use it as a springboard really into a very, very critical topic, which we just bumped into a couple seconds ago. There are some people that when you try to set boundaries with them, and when you try to have a conversation with them and let them know what's going on, they throw a tantrum. I don't have a better word for it, but they throw a tantrum. They'll scream, they'll yell, they'll call you names, they'll use what I call illegal conversation tactics, where they're trying to undermine your point, you're being just like your mother, they'll use strawman arguments. So, you know, so you're basically saying that you don't care about me. They'll use a whole bunch of tactics that make it, quite frankly, impossible to have a normal, respectable adult conversation about a topic where I could say what I feel, you could say what you feel, we can explore each other's points of view, we can discuss how we differ, and maybe we'll never agree. There's some people who, when you try to have a conversation with them, you can't. And what often happens when you try to have a conversation, the way someone feels like when they're in a relationship with somebody, they feel like they're walking on eggshells. And I think that might have been part of the 20% of the poll, right? I avoid setting boundaries because I feel guilty, fear, conflict. I'm unsure how to communicate them. A lot of times I'm very uncomfortable setting boundaries because if I do, my spouse is going to blow the roof off the conversation. They won't talk to me for a week. They'll give me the silent treatment. They'll treat me with contempt. They'll yell. They'll scream. They'll become emotionally abusive. They'll become physically abusive. So part of what this person mentioned over here is two things. He said, hey, one second, there's a double standard. But part of what you mentioned in your question is they'll use derogatory terms when they talk to me about this, right? So when I can't have a conversation with you, when I try to have a conversation with you and you blow it up, then it gets very difficult to do what the appropriate logical thing, because the appropriate logical thing in this thing is for him to sit down and have a discussion with his wife about the double standard, which he says he does. And she says it's different. The next appropriate move is to drill in and get really curious. What does different mean? Help me understand. Like, genuinely help me understand what's different. Maybe his wife will say, what's different is that you have your conversation, you're on the phone during dinner time when the kids are around. When I do it, it's not when the kids are around. Oh, okay. So now she's saying something. From the time she's saying that she has a really big problem with someone on the phone when the kids are around the family time. When someone's not at family time, then she's okay with it, right? Now, maybe he'll agree with that. Maybe he won't agree. Maybe he'll decide to experiment with that. Maybe she'll decide to maybe he'll decide to experiment with that and stop using his phone during dinner and around the family and only do it when it's just the two of them together and see what happens. Maybe she'll be fine with that. Maybe she won't be fine with that. And then he gets to have another conversation about it. So without this piece of derogatory and walking on eggshells and someone blowing up conversations, you can have these conversations. You can be very curious. You can try to figure out what's going on. Like the first question we had was like, hey, help me understand what's going on. I want to genuinely understand. Like, I want to understand what's different. Explain it to me. Let's get into the nitty gritty. Let's pull some test cases, you know? Why was this different than that? Right? Not to win, not to fight, but to understand, to genuinely understand. Where you can't do this and where you run into trouble when this happens is when the other person isn't willing or isn't able sometimes to have that conversation with you because they get angry, because they get upset, because they give you the silent treatment. So there's really two critical pieces over here. One of them is like we discussed, you have to be able to have a conversation about the conversation. So we're not talking about the cell phone now. We're not talking about the chinuch. We're not talking about the going to your parents for Shabbos. We're not talking about forgetting your stuff on the floor and not cleaning up after yourself. That's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about the fact, I'm approaching you to talk about the fact that, hey, last night I tried to discuss something, if you're in the middle of discussing something, and in the middle you called me a name. I'm asking, and I want to tell you that when you said that to me, it really hurt me. I want to be able to have a productive conversation with you, where I hear what you have to say and you hear what I have to say, and maybe we agree and maybe we disagree, but we get it out in the open. And instead, in the middle, you called me a name. Could you please not call me a name? That really hurts me. So to start having a conversation about having a conversation. So that's one piece. You can have the conversation about having the conversation. This is a trick that therapists do all the time. When you're sitting with your client, and it's a trick, you know, but I say that tongue in cheek. It's a very valuable technique. You're sitting with your client and the therapy's not working. And we were talking about your anxiety. We're not getting anywhere. Now we might start having a conversation about how is the work together going? Like what's happening over here in the room over here? Hey, look, it seems like you're very frustrated with me, Mr. Klein. Tell me what's going on. Let's talk about this. So it's very helpful when you have a lock and you're trying to open it with a key, but the key for the lock is inside another locked box. So then what you have to do is you have to first open that box, then take out the key and then open this one. So you have to be able to unlock the ability to have a conversation. That's one piece. Another piece, and this is no less critical, is the fact that you must learn and you must develop the ability to be okay when your spouse is not okay with you. So your spouse is giving you the silent treatment, they're angry at you, they're upset at you, they're not happy with you, they're not being warm with you. You must develop the ability, and for some people this is very, very difficult, you must develop the ability to be comfortable and okay with yourself. One trick to do this is most people have things that they don't do because it's not right for their spouse. A guy maybe wants to go play basketball with his friends, but it's not right. His wife, you know, he works hard all day. His wife wants to see him. He's home at night. It's not yosher for him to go out and eat chalent and hang with his friends. It's not fair. She wants him to be around. Maybe the wife wants to go to New York to go shopping, but it's not really going to be so right. Her husband's home, you know. But when your spouse is really upset at you and they're not treating you very warmly and nicely, it's a really good time to say, listen, you know, if you don't want to hang out together, that's great. You know, I'm going to go hang out with the boys. We'll go play some basketball. So again, this is not a technique to get someone, to shtuch somebody, or to win a fight. This is far different than that. When you have the ability to enjoy yourself and to be happy and calm and comfortable, even when your spouse is very upset at you, you don't have to fold in the face of their displeasure and their anger. And you don't have to fold in the face of their disappointment with you. And that allows you to keep a boundary, because the number one reason why people don't keep and set boundaries is because if I don't do and I don't toe the party line of my spouse, they'll be upset at me and I cannot tolerate. I cannot function. I'm too enmeshed with my spouse. I'm too codependent. I cannot function when my spouse is not happy with me and smiling at me and warm and yummy with me. So when you think about almost every Shalom Bayis scenario where someone is swallowing something that they don't want to swallow. Sometimes you swallow them because you talk and believe it's the right thing. You think it's a good thing. But when you swallow something you don't want to swallow, it's because, oh, I have a gun to my head. And the gun is the emotional gun of my spouse won't be sefridin with me. And that I can't tolerate. You must develop the ability to tolerate, the ability to feel good with yourself. Find a hobby. Like I tell people, get a life. find something to do that you enjoy that maybe you don't do, but when your spouse is not happy with you, that's when you're going to pull that out of the freezer. That's when you're going to pull that thing out.
You're on a tightrope, because that could also cause like a nifrit also in the relationship. Anytime there's a fight, it's like, oh, I'm going to go play with my friend's basketball, which causes...
Correct. Absolutely.
You have to clarify what you're saying a little clearer.
Absolutely. There are many people who use this as an avoidance technique, right? Like, we're not getting along. Shalom. See you later, right?
Yisrael said.
What's that?
Yisrael said to do that.
Right, exactly. So obviously nobody here on this conversation is avoidant. Pastor Shalom, again, I'm speaking tongue in cheek, right? I'm saying more like this. The time when this is appropriate is in a very, very specific scenario. And that is when I've gone ahead and expressed my boundaries. I've expressed how I feel. I've made a request. I've said that I'll do something, or I've acted in a way that my spouse isn't happy about. And instead of responding to me respectfully like an adult and saying, you feel A, okay, very good, I feel B. You want A, I want B. Let's talk about it. Let's handle. All of a sudden they're giving me the silent treatment. They're snapping at me. They're nasty to me. They're talking down to me. When I'm doing something that when I didn't do anything wrong, all I did was try to have a conversation or try to do something that I felt was the right thing to do. And I believe, genuinely believe it's the right thing to do. I'm not doing any avla to anybody. And they respond in turn by trying to punish me emotionally by withholding affection or by bringing anger and on me. That is when I have to be able to resist that and halt sich stark and hold strong with my position. If and when it's a position that I've taken after clear deliberation. So, for example, in the example of...
This is also easier for a man to do than a woman, because a man has the ability to do that.
Yes.
Is more down.
Yes, absolutely. There's no question that very often men have a temperament. And again, you know, I wouldn't stereotype all men one way or the other. There's obviously a lot of crossover. But very often men have a temperament that they're able to disconnect emotionally in a sense. At the same time, ironically enough, women very often are far more in tune with what makes them happy. And they're far more in tune with what picks them up and does something for them. So if you ask a guy, like, you know, what could you do to make yourself happy when your spouse is unhappy with you? A lot of men will just shoot you a very blank look. A lot of women will say, oh, actually, now that you mention it, I got A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And what they need is the encouragement to say, okay, well, you know what? Go do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. So if some of our questioners that we had, you know, in the example of the one with Shalom Bias, this person said, with the child, I spoke to my people, this is what they told me to do, I wish I didn't have to do this. And in response to having that conversation, her husband gave her the silent treatment for 3 days. Then she should whip out her diary of the things that she wants to do that give her a good time, that help her feel good about herself, and start doing them. Like, that's where...
For self-care to survive.
Correct. Self-care when you've sat down and you are doing something that is the right thing. You're not reacting. You're not trying to punish your spouse. And you're like, hey, look, this is, by the way, the difference between boundaries and a punishment. A punishment is where you misbehave, you're going to get a patchna, and there's nothing you can do to avoid it. Like, this is here to teach you a lesson. A boundary, I'm not here to teach you a lesson. The minute that you're ready to play ball, I'm here. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. You know, you have this with parents as well. People talk about alienating parents. It's a very hot topic. Right? There's a difference between alienating parents and setting a boundary with parents. Alienating parents means, I don't like the way you are, so I am never going to talk to you again, or I'm not going to talk to you for the next year. A boundary with parents says, listen, the last few times I've spoken to you, you've started putting my spouse down to me and telling me that I should never have married them. That's not something that I can tolerate. So the next time that we're talking, if you're going to put my spouse down, I'm going to hang up the phone. And if you're not going to commit to have a conversation where you won't do that, then I'm not going to call you on Erev Shabbos. I'm not alienating anybody. The moment she's ready to play ball or he's ready to play ball, I'm here. I'm ready. But there are rules to the game. That's the difference between a punishment and alienation. That's the difference between what we're doing over here as a healthy move versus an unhealthy move.
So you're saying after having that healthy communication, after saying it in a healthy manner, and the response is... with, you know, the...
I don't help this room.
Then the idea is don't fall apart.
Correct.
don't fall apart. Now my question is, to continue this conversation, this is unacceptable. How often, if this happens very often, and, you know, every twice a week, they talk only once because they're always not happy having conversation. Whatever they do, whatever they say, they're silent treatment. What do they do? What do you do in that relationship?
It's a great question. Okay. And unfortunately, some relationships look like that. There are some people who are ill and they're unwell and they can't regulate themselves and they get very triggered. And a lot of times it's from a combination of the temperament that they have and how they grew up and certain traumas in their life. And it's a tremendous rahmanas on them. And at the same time, it's a tremendous rahmanas on their spouses. There's some really, really difficult people in the world. That's just the facts. There's no way you can sugarcoat that. So one piece I'll tell you is that there is no mitzvah to bring up every difficult conversation every day. So that's number one. You know, you don't have to try to solve all of the problems.
Does that mean that I'm a vata?
That means I'm being strategic. Right? That means I'm being strategic. I'm saying, listen, I know this is not okay. And this is something that I'm going to bring up. It's something I'm going to address. And right now my target is something else. My target is something more pressing. I'm working in order of priority. But that's the first piece. Another piece that I think is critical is that very often with people like this, Coach Menachem, it very quickly does not become about the topic at hand. It's not about the dishes in the sink. It's not about the chinuch. It's not about the car or the spending. The conversation becomes and has to become about the way you act when we try to have a conversation. That topic becomes the sole topic of conversation because that is the overreaching meta topic that always shows up. So in essence, the conversation is about how difficult you're being, right? Without saying those words, the conversation is, I'm trying to have a conversation with you and you're calling me names and you're yelling at me and you're stomping and you're screaming and you're doing this and you're giving me the silent treatment. That is what the conversation becomes about. Conversation becomes about that engagement in the relationship. And you will be surprised to find that people are, I would say to a certain degree, pretty trainable. So if every time your spouse throws a tantrum, you have backed down and they've gotten away, you have helped train them to throw more tantrums. It's just like little children. Every time he throws a tantrum, he gets a lollipop, I can guarantee you that he will throw you more tantrums more frequently and more intense. And at the same time, if you begin standing up to the tantrum, again, not yelling and screaming, not cursing him out, not thing, standing up in a firm, calm, respectable manner, and not being affected by the tantrum. And this is critical in parenting. That when my two-year-old screams, you're an ichi tati. If my heart breaks when he says that and I fold like a cheap suit, it's all over, right? I have to be able to have my two-year-old say ichi tati and feel okay with myself. And if I don't feel okay with myself, go not feel okay with myself in my room where he doesn't see me. I have to be able to hold the line and be able to find something that holds me together, because if I collapse when he says ichi tati, I'm done. But once you've done this, once, twice, three, five, seven, 11 times, at a certain point, their behavior, the tantrums, aren't working. They're not working. They're getting pulled out.
Let's clarify. You're saying basically, in short, that if somebody has a tendency to not communicate well after you're trying to communicate to them, and then you fold, that becomes the new way of relationship. So basically, they want something. You try to have a conversation. They just scream, yell, act derogatory. And that's how they get what they want, and this becomes the cycle.
Correct. Without them, by the way, a lot of times without them even consciously being aware of it. It's not like they're planning and plotting, like, haha, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna yell out and curse my wife, and then she'll do what I said. That's a lot of times it's not intentional. It's automatic. It happens by itself. The 2 year olds, when a 12 month old, you know, isn't sleep trained and yells to come out of her crib, and then you take the baby out of her neck, she's not sitting and sejbening, stroking her long white beard, coming up with a strategy. She just gets automatically trained like that. So this thing happens at a level in your brain that is very often far below conscious awareness. And the other way as well, by the way, the training is a very interesting story about this. There was a professor who was teaching his class about shaping and how you respond to someone shapes the behavior. So the class decided amongst themselves that they were going to shape the professor's behavior. Every time he lectured on the right side of the room, they started not listening and talking out loud. And every time he lectured from the left side, they would all pay focused attention. And by the end of the year, he was lecturing from a stool in the corner in the left side of the room. And on the last day of class, they confronted him. They told him, by the way, we just want to let you know, we've been running an experiment on you all year. We've been shaping you to sit in the corner. And he flatly denied it and said, no, he's always taught from a stool in the left corner of the room. This is where it feels more comfortable for him to teach. So I think that's a really good illustration. It won't necessarily be that a light bulb goes off in anybody's head. It's not like all of a sudden they're going to be like, aha, I think you're right. I think we should have adult conversations now. It's just going to be more like sometimes you walk into a room and there's chocolates on the table and you kind of feel like you want to eat them. And sometimes there's chocolates on the table and you're like, I'm not in the mood. It's going to more be like, this is what the automatic response is, or it's not the automatic response. But it's going to be focused on how you're training the other person. If you're able to be calm, comfortable, and okay with yourself, well, they're tantruming, that's going to go a really long way to helping shape their behavior. Now, sometimes this is so distressing for them, and it's so difficult for them that they start seeking therapy themselves, which is a great outcome. You're no longer backing down on them. So now this relationship, this whole situation, it's not easy street anymore. You're not just all of a sudden doing everything they demand when they demand it, how they demand. Now it's getting really tough for them. Now they start feeling the intensity gets amped up and they have to look for help. One last piece which I want to say, which is really critical actually, it's called an extinction burst. You should know this when it comes to parenting children and the spouses as well, when it's relevant. Whenever you are trying to train someone out of something, before you're matzliach, you get an extra strong koyach keneged before
they
it goes.
They up the ante.
That's right. Okay. You're nodding like someone who's trained his young children perhaps, right? Where right before you're about to end the tantrum, he triples down. And then if you halt the start, boom, then it disappears and it falls off a cliff. The same thing with people as well. So sometimes when you start doing this piece, you actually get an intensification. But if you hold on and you hold strong and you halt the start with your basketball game or your manicure or whatever it is that allows you to not be affected or to be less affected by what's going on, that's when it tamps down. And then magically, like nothing ever happened, the next time maybe this behavior doesn't trigger. It's fascinating. If you're not looking out for it, you won't notice it. You'll be like, oh, it's really weird. I don't know. They don't seem to do that anymore. I don't know why. So there's no light bulbs. It's not a product of intellectual understanding. It's a product of training on like a very, very animalistic level. It's very interesting.
So this is a myriad of parts. There's so many more live questions. Let's try to get some more in. Okay. You're on.
Thank you. My question is not necessarily specific to one scenario or another, but when by nature I just want to give, I'm so happy if I can do something that the other person wants, but I know that the boundary setting is what's healthy and what I need to do. What self-talk can you advise for me to, within my own head, do? Because I know cognitively I need to set the boundaries, but my heart isn't quite feeling it. So how can I self-talk myself through the boundary setting?
Okay, great question. All right, let me ask you a question, okay? You say that you love to give, right? You enjoy giving. That's what you want to do.
Right.
Right? Okay. And after you give, do you feel resentful? Do you feel upset about it? Does it bother you? Are you keeping score? Well, no, you're just happy to give.
I'm happy to give, but once in a while when I know it's not in my best interest, I'm not resentful of the other person. I am upset with myself for not having set the boundary of what was best for me to achieve what I need to do.
Okay, so I know you said you don't want to give a specific example. I'm going to have to ask you for a specific example. I'm sorry. So I can understand this better and I can perhaps be able to maybe answer your question if I can. Do you have a specific example of a case where it's,
sure,
it's not?
Sure, yeah. Sure. Okay, so let's say someone asked me to help them with something.
Okay.
And I very much wanted to help them with, okay, with what they needed. Okay. But I also knew I had a finite amount of time.
Okay.
And so I told them ahead of time, this is the time period that I have where I can help them.
Okay.
And it wasn't their business what was going on before or after.
Right.
But this is the time that I had. During that time period, they were not, whether it was calm enough, organized enough, whatever it is, to get to even what was most important to them first.
Okay.
They came away frustrated. Okay. I had not helped them with what was most important to them, and okay, they wanted to stay put so I would continue helping them. And I'm really sorry. I can't do anything more at this point this evening. I have to stop now. And I had this horrible feeling inside, even though I knew what I was doing was correct. I knew that I had helped to the best that I could. But I also, and I knew I had to set that boundary because what my husband and I then had going on needed to take place.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt lousy in terms of the person. And the person, she and I were good with it. But I just felt lousy inside.
Okay. So your question is, what can you do to make sure that you keep the boundary, or how could you make sure that you, how could you feel better about doing so?
How can I feel better about doing so when I cognitively know that I'm doing what's healthy and right? It just doesn't feel good when I wish I could help fully, completely, and I know I can't. How can I bring my feelings to where my head is? What can I do to, I'm one to definitely think about what's going on inside and self-talk myself through different things. So what self-talk can I do?
I almost get the sense that, like, in your heart, it feels like there is unlimited me. Like your heart almost feels like I can give everything to everybody. Like, that actually can work. Like, I can sit with this person and give them as much time as they need. And I can also kind of take care of that other thing that has to be taken care of. And they're kind of not going to clash with each other. Is that?
Yes. Yeah. And then I know I need to set those boundaries because I know realistically I can't.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like in your heart, there's this peace that, like, there is enough of me for everybody. There are no limits to what I can give and what I can do, in a sense.
But I know that I definitely.
Yeah, I understand. I know that it's not like that. I understand. I'm deliberately kind of focusing on the peace of your heart. Okay. Right?
Yes.
And like, I'm sure that there's a really good reason it feels that way. It might be that it feels that way because when you consider the alternative, like, there's something scary about that, or there's something kind of very yucky about that. Like, what if there's not enough of me for the whole world? Forget about if I should keep boundaries. Let's leave that aside for a moment. Let's talk more about, like, kind of like the fundamental facts on the ground. Like, in your heart, it feels like the way reality works is that I can just do unlimited for everybody, and there's enough for that. Like, nothing's gonna ever conflict with each other. There's enough. And I guess the question that I'd be really curious about before I even start thinking about what self-talk to do is, like, what happens? What would it feel like if in your heart you knew that there isn't unlimited me for everybody in the whole world? I wonder what would happen inside of you. So I don't want you to answer that question now. Okay. Cause, it's really something I think that it might be useful for you to kind of sit with and wonder. And my guess is that you probably feel some strong emotions about it. It's my guess, just taking a gander here, that you probably end up feeling some strong emotions around that. Like, what if my heart felt there wasn't enough me for everybody, but there's a limited amount of me, that I'm not unlimited. And whatever those emotions are, that's where I would actually ask you to take that tremendous sense of empathy that you have and caring, and turn that towards yourself and to your own feelings about that, and to sit with yourself and be with yourself and allow those feelings to be there and allow yourself to experience whatever that might be. Maybe it will be sadness. Maybe it will be fear. Maybe it will be anger. I don't know. I don't know what's going to show up over there, but my guess is something strong is going to show up. Maybe it will be a positive emotion. Like, maybe there will be a sense of something so positive about being there for everybody that you kind of feel like, I treasure this so much. Whatever it is, it's something you really feel strongly about. And it sounds like it's something that's really, really kind of like deep inside over there. It's like really part of part of who you are in a sense. So at that point, I would say to you, hey, can you take this tremendous sense of giving and presence and give it to you and sit with the feelings that come up and allow them to be there and allow them to develop? And I think that that might do you a lot. That might be a lot more helpful than kind of self-talk. Is that at all useful, or am I completely beating down the wrong path here?
I'll only know, I guess, when I really sit with it and try.
Okay, so we'll have to wait for the feedback. We'll have to wait for the feedback. Okay.
Yeah.
But I sit, rather than thinking about boundaries and what's the right thing and the wrong thing, let's leave that aside for a moment, right? I want you to sit with the basic fact about reality. Is there enough of me for the whole world? Right? Am I unlimited in my ability to help and be there for everybody? That's kind of the piece that might be helpful to send. Okay.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Israel, let's go to the next live question.
Yes.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi. You hear me?
Yes. Sure. Loud and clear.
Okay. Thank you so much, first of all. I'm really enjoying this topic.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, so basically my question is regarding what you mentioned earlier. You said about, like, there's different levels of setting boundaries. So you said, like, say one level, like, you could say, like, you could give in, but then, like, you say how you feel about it.
Yes.
So my question on that is basically, so I'll give you, like, an example. Like, so my husband doesn't like going to my parents for whatever reason, with the location, and, you know, so we rarely go. We don't live next to each other, and, like, we really don't go often. Okay, now before Yantiv, and like I mentioned about, you know, going, so of course he was like, you know, like, it's really something like he can do, and, so I was like, okay, to me it's like, I get it that it's something that's hard for him, but many times, like, I do things that are hard for me, and I just do it because that's what we gotta do. So at some point he was like, okay, I'll do it, we'll go, but I'm just letting you know, like, I guess that's where it comes in about, like, telling the feelings, I'm gonna be miserable. And that's where I shut down. I was like, okay, no thanks. We're not going. Like, so I hear that there's different levels, like, but what does it do to me? When somebody tells me, like, we're gonna go, but I'm just saying I'm gonna be miserable there the whole time. Like, I'm gonna be there and I'll be like, my husband's miserable. Like, to me, it's like, either you do it fully. Like, I get it. He doesn't have to be, like, he could be honest with me. But, like, I guess he could tell me, like, this is not something that I really enjoy doing, but, like, if you really want to go, I get it. I'll do it for you. But, like, to tell me, like, I'll be miserable, like, I don't know. Like, it just, I shut down from that. And yeah. In general, I'm that type, like you mentioned also before about, like, the ability to stay, like, okay, even if your spouse is upset. In general, I'm, like, very much, like, the opposite. Like, I get very, like I need people to be happy with me. It's something that comes from to work within myself, but, like, I'm just that nature. Like,
yeah.
I just have a hard time with that. Like, I constantly, like, I sense people, like, is he upset with me, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my question.
Okay. So it sounds like, you'll tell me if I'm right about this. It sounds like you're saying, like, hey, when he said, I'll be miserable, it didn't feel like he was saying that to let me know what he'll feel like. It felt like he was doing that as a way to kind of, like, get me a little.
So kind of, like, I don't know if to get me, but, like, I don't care if he tells me his feeling, as you said, but,
okay.
But, like, what did it feel like? It felt like, why was this so, like, why did it bother me so much? Cause I'm not sure.
Okay. That's good. It's good that you're curious about that and you're not sure.
I felt like if you're doing it, like, then kind of like to tell me, like, you're miserable is like, then I don't know. I can't do it like that. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
Okay.
It just didn't feel right to me.
Okay. Something about it didn't feel right, but you're finding it a bit difficult to pinpoint precisely what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Like maybe part of it is like, hey, if you're miserable, then I didn't want to go. Like,
maybe because it didn't feel right because I feel like I'm constantly giving in. I'm constantly saying yes for things that maybe I might not like want to do. And it's like, if I could do it, like, why can't you do it for me?
Yeah.
Other than maybe I have the issue of not being able to set boundaries and maybe I got to work on that. But
right.
I felt like I'm always giving in, like this one thing, like, can't you do it with a smile? Like, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, and that is right. It's very unfair. You know, if I'm the one who is always giving in with a smile, and then the one time you finally give in, it's like, I'm going to be miserable. Yeah, that is a very unfair transaction. Yeah. Yeah. So what's your question? Again, let's go back to the question now that we're able to clarify this piece. So what's the question that you have? One second. Did we lose you?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So if you can come back. Now that we've clarified this piece,
so
what
is your question? Right. So the question is that like when he told that to me, I was totally like, this was just like wrong. Yeah. Like, and like we spoke about it afterwards and I told him how I felt and I tried explaining to him like in the absolute, let's say if you would really want me to go with you somewhere and I keep telling you, no, I can't. Fine. I'll tell you, you know what? We're going to go, but I'm going to be miserable there. Would you still want to go? Like I want him to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he understood and whatever, we spoke about it. That was that. Now, like, we were listening to this together, actually, so we heard it together, but the different levels, somebody hasn't pointed out. You see, there's different levels of being able to give in. Like, you say, so I'm like, was I totally, like, wrong for feeling like this, that it's totally, like, I felt like his reaction was totally wrong. Now I'm hearing there's different levels, so maybe there are different levels, I just have to accept it. I don't know, my question is something I gotta accept, or,
What I understood at this role is that you're saying that there's people that I'm not going and they put their foot down and that's it. So
right.
He went, but he didn't go with the geschmack.
Correct. And correct. And there is a
he
level
with pulling the mule, but he did it versus.
Correct. And there is a level called, yes, I'll go and I'm not going to enjoy myself. I'm going to be miserable. Yeah.
So right?
I need to clarify because I heard you say before and you said this twice. I want him to tell me how he feels. Like, you know, it sounds like you're saying, I don't want him to pretend like he's going to have a good time if he won't, right? Did I hear that correctly? Okay.
So maybe it's the way it was said. Maybe like if it's, like if it said like, I'll be miserable and like, that's dead. Or like, I'll,
right.
Or kind of like, I'm not going to, look, it's not something I want to do, but I'll do it for you. Cause
right.
I know that you really want to go. Like, as
right.
opposed to like, fine. You could go, but like, I'll be miserable. Like, I don't know, maybe
right.
it's the way it was said.
Yeah, I don't, that's what I'm wondering. You know, if is it, you know, that's kind of like the question, right? Did you have a problem with the fact that it'll be miserable? Or was it more that you had a problem that it felt like he was saying that to try to like, you know, get you or?
Right, I hear. So maybe that.
Yeah, right. Ooh. So then the conversation you have with him is like, hey, listen, if you're going to be miserable, I want to know about that. I don't want to go and have you be miserable and have you pretend like you're not miserable because that doesn't help anybody, right? Because then I'm going to wonder why you don't want to sit and schmooze with my brother after the meal while you disappeared. And I'm going to be all upset about that. And if I had known you were miserable, I'd understand it perfectly well. You hate the place anyways. Of course you don't want to schmooze with the guy, right? Now I understand why it's so important for me to take a walk with you after the Suda because you're miserable. So I deserve to give you some additional time and attention because you're very miserable over here. So it's important for me to know how you feel about that. At the same time, I kind of felt when you said that you were like trying to shtach me a little. And then you could say to him, were you? Like, was that you were trying to do? Or was that just a genuine neutral, like, this is what I feel. I just want to share my wife. I want to tell you how I feel about it. What was it like for you? And I wonder what he'll say. Maybe he'll say, I was kind of trying to stuff you. And you could say, could you please not do that, right? Then you can have a conversation about that. Or maybe he'll say, no, I wasn't trying to get you. I was just, I really hate it there, you know? Like, it's really yucky for me, you know? And then maybe there's a level of how much he hates it there that you're not aware of, that after this conversation, you're like, oh, wow. I thought he didn't like it. I thought he hated it. I didn't realize that he really hates it. And that's great. Now you know that, you know? So mm-hmm. we don't know right now. Is the fact that he said it with such strength because he hates it more than you think he hates it? Or the fact that he said it with strength because he was out to get you a little. If he was out to get you, well, then we gotta give him a patch for that, right? I mean, again, we're not advocating physical, we're not advocating physical abuse. If it's that he hates it more than you thought he hated it, then it's really important for you to know that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I think like it's, maybe it's not like, I know, I think like we spoke about it last, like I know how much he hates it, but maybe it's also, I guess it also comes into play that I have a hard time with like, I'm a people pleaser, so I need to feel like everyone's happy with me, and so I guess that's also hard for me.
It's hard for me to go and know that he's miserable, like, right? Like I wish he would love going and then everything would be great because I would want to go, he would want to go, we'd both be happy and it would be Shalom Al Yisrael, right?
Right.
Yeah. That would be great. I have to say, I'm pro that, if, you know. You have my vote. If that's the platform you're running on,
Right. So yeah, what about the level, like a person, let's say you were telling me, like, we're not going, that's it. Like, cause many times, let's say certain things that I want is like just, it's just non-negotiable. Like, it's like a no. Right. And that I also have a hard time with because it's like, I feel like, why can't he just say yes? Even though, like, I get it. Like, sometimes a person has to say no, but my question is, like, is this something I have to learn to accept or, like, I don't know, or it...
So I wonder, and you brought this up a little, I wonder if this might be playing a piece of the dynamic. You say that a lot of times you give in to him and you do what he wants and you do it with a smile.
That's me. I feel like I'm always giving in, and when I want something and I get a no, it really hurts me.
So I'm wondering if he knows about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does he know how much you give in, or does he doesn't even know?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Chap.
So if he doesn't chap that you're giving in, he's like, I don't know. She gives in to me twice a year, and I give in to her twice a year.
Also, when you're giving in, are you also giving in on manas that he should give in to you?
No. It's just that I don't know. I feel like by nature, I'm just more like that. Like, I don't know.
But this is why it's so important. That when you give in, if it's something that you kind of feel like there's an imbalance, this is why it's so important to say, I'm doing this. I don't want to do it, and I'm doing it for you. Right? This is a great example why, right? Because then he's like, wow, she did the last 12 things, right?
How hard it is, so it's like, this correct. Is the way it is.
Right. But if he's not aware of the fact that you've been doing this, right, then it could be that for him, it's like, I don't know, we give in to each other twice a year, we're pretty even, it's pretty good. It's a great relationship, right? So that might be a piece of the puzzle here. That maybe when you're giving in, he doesn't even know that. He's not even aware of the fact. Now, if you were giving in and he wasn't aware of it, but to you, it wasn't hurtful to you when he didn't give in, then that would be fine. I'd have no problem with that. Cause you're allowed to give in to somebody if you don't keep score, you know, but if you're keeping score, again, not consciously, it's not like you sat down and like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to keep score. But if you're keeping score even unconsciously, and by the way, keeping score is not such a terrible thing to do, because sometimes you have to keep score. But if you're keeping score unconsciously, then he should know that you're keeping score. That's not going to work if you're keeping score and he doesn't know about that. That's not going to go down well.
Right.
Now, it's uncomfortable to keep score, because when you push, let's find out the next time you say to him, I'm going to do it because you want it, but I don't really want it. Let's see how he's up with that. Maybe, you know, let's see what he does with that, right? Maybe he pushes back against that. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you for asking.
Okay, so I have two more questions to cover. We have a live one and then this one. I think
do you have any men that want to ask questions where the men have no
I'm the man. I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask.
Oh, you're okay. This is you. Okay. Fair enough.
I'm going to be the man question. It's very
okay, go for
question.
It.
And I think this is like a different part of the boundary that we want. I want to really clarify.
Yeah.
Man's writing the question. I need time after a hard day work. Once in a week, I go out with my friends, Shalom, basketball, whatever it is. How do you differentiate between setting boundaries in a marriage versus being selfish and uncaring? So the question really is, and this is, I want to clarify because I think it's such a good question. Let's use the man's point of view. We'll turn to the woman's. Like, there are certain things that men like to do, and I'm sure a lot of guys can relate. They like to go out to once a week, or they like to do their basketball. They want to go on a trip with their friend, positive. Now, I'm not going to get into the ashkafa part. But the question is, how do you know if it's something that's, this is a boundary, this is what I need, this is what I should do, and not be a martyr for the marriage? Versus men, they're just like, they never want to go out because my wife's going to be upset, it's just not worth it. How do you balance what's right and what's wrong? And then same, I want to pause. I want to just flip it to the lady. Same thing with the lady, right? The lady wants to go with her friends. She wants to go shopping. She leaves him with the kids. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's not. Mixing it in with the self-care, like selfish, not selfish boundaries, taking advantage. How do you measure it?
Absolutely lovely.
Yourself and your spouse.
Yes, absolutely lovely question. Okay, it's a really, really critical question because you can take something like this and act like a real animal, you know, right, to say it delicately, right? And I think that the answer to this question is not very cut and dry, and it's not very clear cut because it really depends on what's your cultural setting? What community do you live in? What are your families like? Like so much of this is dependent on time and place and culture and context. So I've had a lot of clients that I'll say to them, do you have somebody who you can ask what's appropriate that knows you and your wife, that someone who you trust, and you can say, tell me what's appropriate culturally for us. Is this an appropriate thing or not? So sometimes the answer to this question is to go to somebody, don't, and the question that you should ask them is not, should you give in, should you not give in? That is not the question. That is not, you're not asking for advice on what's the smart thing to do. The question is this a reasonable, normal thing for someone in my position to do or to want to do? Is it reasonable and normal that we're making X amount of income to spend Y on a bar mitzvah or not? Is my position an unreasonable position or not? To ask someone so with a question like that, you might want to ask Mesila that question, right? There might be a question you might want to ask a Rav, what's reasonable and appropriate. But sometimes the answer to this question, you won't find it in yourself. It's a question you have to ask somebody who knows you and your wife, who knows the culture that you're in, and can say to you, this is a reasonable and appropriate thing in the world and in the culture that you live in. So I can tell you straight up that in the world that we live in, we would say it's not reasonable and normal and appropriate for a husband to go out every single night. He comes home at 5 from work, is home till 6, and go out from 6 to midnight every night of the week playing basketball. I think we would both agree on that, that that is an unreasonable thing, right? I think we would also agree that it's unreasonable for a husband to come home at 5, be allowed to go to Myriv for 15 minutes, come home, and never ever walk out of the house any other time from 5 till the next morning. No parlor meetings, no Rav Shaila's, nothing, right? I think we would both agree, can't schmooze with anybody even for 5 minutes after Myriv, you can't go to a night shear. We would both agree that that's unreasonable, right? So, me and you, in the culture that we're in, the world we're in, as diverse as it is, we can agree that these are like two bounds on this, right? And the question is, and everything in the middle. So I will tell you that in my culture, in my world that I live in, for me to pick up and pack out and go Rosh Hashanah somewhere and leave my wife and kids at home would be absolutely inappropriate. It would just be dead wrong. And me doing that would be selfish. But if I was a Breslov Chassid and we were, you know, we were good, born and bred Breslovers. My wife was a Breslover, and our parents are Breslovers. For me to have to stay home on Rosh Hashanah and not go to Uman would be absolutely inappropriate. So 1,000% depends on the culture that you're living in, the context that you're in, and where you're coming from, where she's coming from, what community, all these things play into the fact. And a lot of times, a person will not be in the position to be able to pass in the Shiloh. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. And when it's not, you have to find somebody else who can answer the question. Not what should I do? That's not the question you're asking. The question you're asking is this an appropriate or inappropriate? Is that useful?
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay.
Maybe one other thing is that there are times, even though when things are standard and it's a normal thing, there could be tkufas when a woman's going through a hard time or a man's going through a time, that you could be machnia a little bit in those situations. It's not like...
Right. Listen, context is everything, right? So it's not normal, right? Maybe the guy, again, and I know nothing about the breslov of the culture, the rest of the world, but maybe if the guy is a breslov chassid and there's some terrible tragedy going on in the family and the wife is stricken with chassid with a terrible illness, maybe in that case it would be absolutely inappropriate to go to Uman, right? So it's not just about... This is no one size fits all. It's someone who knows you and your wife and the situation and the factors that are on the table can say to you, okay, having weighed all these components, I could tell you you're off the wall. Or having weighed all these components, I could tell you, no, this actually sounds pretty reasonable. So that's the question you're trying to answer.
Shalom Murdick, let's go one live last question.
All right.
Here we go.
So I hung out till the end. This was phenomenal. Wow.
I love how you
prefaced it. I'm doing this for 23 years, so I could understand where, we're taught to give in. And then there were times when I wanted to win the fight. And now it's like, now it's tricky because I'm listening to all the questions and I can relate to each one. So the question is, it's really, I think when I'm really confident, then I could also get a no, you know? Like if I'm confident that my husband doesn't let you want to come to my parents for Yontif and he's going to have a horrible time. It's okay. So just come, you know? The question is, when is it that I'm vater on a big thing or even on a not such a big thing?
So your question is when you should be mevater. Is that your question?
Like now it sounds like mevater is a bad thing. You know, like, because okay.
Super happy that you asked this question. Okay. So you started off in the vatronis camp. You got really good at it. And then there were times where you're kind of like, hold on one second. This is a little too much of a good thing. It's time to add some balance back into it.
Yeah.
You shifted a little back. And now you're kind of hearing all these questions like, okay, so one second. So what's the playbook? When am I mevater? When am I not mevater? Should you ever be mevater? Is it always terrible? Am I getting that right?
Right. No, you shouldn't always be mevater. But the question is, I think what I'm hearing is that when I come in and have a good communication and a good confidence level that I want this and I don't get it, then is the time for me to say, I didn't get it this time. Doesn't mean I lost. It doesn't mean I gave in. You know what I'm saying? Mevater, it's sort of on the same thing. It could be a negative or a positive. It doesn't seem so bad. Like, okay, so if you didn't want to come to my parents, this time I could say, okay, so we're not going to go for Yontif. You know what I'm saying? That's not really an issue, but I'm saying, but let's say such a thing, I can give in and be okay with it.
Okay.
But when do you use it? That's the question.
Okay. So do you have, is okay if I ask, do you have children?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever do something for your child that your child never found out about that was really good for them and helped them?
Probably, possibly.
Okay. So maybe the night before, you know, you were putting their lunch in their school bag. You could have picked lunch A, you picked lunch B. They didn't even realize that both options were on the table. You were making dinner. You could have made chicken. You know they don't like chicken. So you decided out of the goodness of your heart that you're going to make hot dogs. You didn't give them a drasha about it. They didn't chap, oh, wow, mommy was so nice to me. You just did it because you love them and you care about them. Have you ever been?
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
Yeah.
Right. In those cases, were you keeping score? Did you have a ledger? Was it like, no. The next day when she left, I was like, and you didn't even put your bag. You know what I did last night? I made hot dogs for you, not chicken. Is that what went down? It was like,
no,
right? You said, I'm going to give this person, I love them, I care about them. I'm just going to give them something out of the goodness of my heart, right?
Right.
When is it right to do that? As much as you can. As much as you can give your children out of the goodness of your heart and not keep score and not have tightness, you should do that. Right? So you pay the tuition and you took them to the doctor and you took them to the dentist and they didn't want you to take them to the doctor. They didn't want you to take them to the dentist and you did it anyway. It's not because you got ice cream for it. Nobody gave you candy. We didn't give you a gold sticker because you did the right because you care about them and you love them. So the amount that we should do for our children because we care about them and love them, that we're not going to keep score, we're not going to have a ledger in our head, we're not going to be counting checks and X's, as much as you can. However, if you can't, then don't pretend like you're doing it 100% and then later whip it out and hit them across the face with it. That's a bad idea. Right? Agreed?
Yeah, agreed.
Right? Don't buy them the shoes if you're going to hold it over their head like a sword. Either buy them the shoes or don't buy them the shoes. Right? So when it comes to your spouse, the same thing applies. As much as you can give your spouse out of the goodness of your heart, without keeping score, without having a ledger, without having tightness, without saying or thinking or feeling, I did this and I did that and I did that and I did that. Whatever you can do, believe, show it. And be meichel any schus that you get from that because you're just giving a gift with no strings attached. go for it. And that depends on what type of person you are, what type of relationship you have, how much, what your tchunas hanefesh is, how much you've worked on your midas.
Interesting, because when you're saying that with the kids, it's easy for me to give the kids without zero leisure. It's interesting.
That's why I started over.
Interesting, and that's like so on target, but because I'm a giving person, but then when you give and give and give, and
that's right.
It's an interesting dynamic, because like when someone says, like when someone mentioned that, like, oh, my spouse, he said no, it's like, I feel like spouses, like husbands shouldn't be fathers. Like they don't get to say yes or no. Like you're both adults. So it's like, if she took a second job to get what she wanted, you can do that because you're an adult. So it's a very interesting, like, it's an interesting fine line that like, you get to be, do whatever you want because you're an adult.
Right.
Then there's a relationship where you don't get real, not because he has a hierarchy and you're less. It's just because you're in a relationship, there should be discussion.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's two people with needs, right? You know, like,
right.
Why should my needs supersede yours and why should yours supersede mine? Right. So.
Right. But I think that the important part is the conversation. Let's see if he constantly, let's say, invites guests that I don't want or approve of or makes me on, like, let's say, in the end of Shabbos, I'm unhappy because of certain things, right? I can go in and say, we have to do this differently because this keeps coming up. You know, it's not like about being angry or like, I'm never going to have them again. These certain people, but it's like, how are we going to do this differently? Because when this part of the family shows up, I'm just unhappy and I love hosting, right? But it's like, but then the part is that like, I'm afraid of having the conversation and not winning. You know what I'm saying? Like if they show up again in a few months from now, and I don't like to be like, oh, I'm never going to have them again. You know, like, no, I'll worry about it when it's not happening tomorrow, right? So, but the question is, if I go in and have the conversation and they do down the line, do come, then I sort of lost, you know?
Right. And it sounds like that's a difficult piece for you.
Yeah, that's the part.
Losing.
That's
the kind of like the having lost kind of really, that's kind of what really gets you. It's like, I have something that's really important to me. I have my point of view over here and it kind of like that's not what ended up.
I'll be like, oh, it wasn't so bad. What's the big deal? Take a clean lady for another day, you know, whatever. Right. And it's not about that. It's just that like when I'm feeling that I'm not respected and my space is not respected, then I get like, and he doesn't value that. So it's interesting. Right. So then I have to get like all strong and all like, you know, feisty.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, but I don't want to be that person. So it's like, okay.
And it sounds like for you, it's kind of like the pattern that you've developed has been, instead of, it sounds like what I just heard you describe here, and maybe this is not, maybe I'm wrong about this. I'm only saying the last, you know, 30 seconds. It sounds like you're saying there's a piece of like, I tell him something and to a certain degree, he minimizes my feelings and he says, well, so then the only way for me to get my way is to say, no, this will not happen again, and I will not allow this, and we're not doing this, right?
Right, so it's gotten better, and I think it has gotten better because when I got better. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying this from, like, that, like, I think when I'm more confident, this is not happening again. Like, you know, like, so I have to figure out that this is not happening again. Like, this is not happening again. Like, no, this time it's like...
So for you... kind of gaining that self-confidence and that strength has kind of helped keep the balance in the relationship.
Yeah.
What I wonder is, I wonder what would happen if you had a conversation with him.
No, I think conversations have gotten easier. That's what I wanted to like really like even share, like when people were still more people on, is that I think, that when we're confident with our, and we hear like almost like, you know, when you like tell that little kid, I see you, I hear you, right? Then they like when they're tantruming and you're giving them that attention, it's like almost when I talk to myself sometimes and say, that wasn't right. I see that wasn't right. Like for myself, if I validate it, for myself, then it doesn't matter really almost what the other people are doing. It's such a funny thing. It's like somebody needs to like notice that wasn't, it's like almost when you talk to your mother or your sister or a friend that understands that this situation is not okay, they would validate you.
Right. You need that validation.
So sometimes I could validate myself and say, even if this conversation doesn't go down the way I wanted to, I at least saw myself in it and say, Razi, that wasn't okay. That's not going to happen again, or I will take care of you. But it's
And it sounds like that's been very powerful for you.
Yeah.
And you're saying to everybody like, hey folks, listen, you know, you might not be where I am, but as you kind of build that sense of self-confidence.
Yeah. That's the sense of self you. is an important piece, because we're going from, we're like, oh, you know, you come into marriage where your husband should have the last word, right? And then it's like, well, that doesn't work.
Yeah, but one second, I'm a person too, right? Yeah.
But they taught it to us. I don't know why. Like, I the first time I heard a lecture like this, the way you opened it up, and I'm like, wow, I've never heard this before.
Okay.
So I think this is like, wow.
I very much appreciate it. I think that it's a very powerful message. One thing that I would perhaps tack onto this that you might find useful, you might not, is I wonder what would happen if you had a conversation with your husband about that piece. Hey, you know, I told you that the guests were really hard for me and it was really unpleasant. And when I said that, you said to me, no, it's not a big deal. Just get some cleaning help. And when that happens, I feel like I'm not being heard. And I feel like you're dismissing and telling me that I don't really feel what I feel and I don't really know what I'm experiencing. And I want to ask you that in the future, when I say how I feel, you can hear me and respect that. You don't have to agree with me. But if you can respect the fact that I feel that way.
Yeah, I definitely will have a conversation like that. And it's not even about like them coming again. It's not even about that. It's about just when I say it's not okay, just respect me.
Just hear what I say.
Yeah.
Don't even,
you don't have to
sell the farm. You don't have to do what I say. You just have to say, oh wow. Sounds like that was really hard for you. Yeah, it sounds like, you know, you really didn't like it when she started making those comments at the Suda. I could see it was really hurt you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Very helpful.
Thank you again.
All right. You're very welcome.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Let's go to the closing segment part. I was texting everybody, Yisrael. I don't know if you have the text on the Zoom. You have the text? You see
I have the text on the Zoom. You asked people to send me compliments. It's the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me.
Okay. So everybody who's on the share tonight, please write on a 1 to 10 at least.
Tell them what to write.
But if you want to write something, write it.
Definitely worth coming on. You should have just told me this in advance. I would have come on a lot sooner. You said, but at the end,
we're
people
to
give
build
you
up your, we're trying to build up your self-confidence over here, you know?
You didn't ask anyone to give me any criticism. It's great.
No.
One side of the picture is the only side
say,
I want.
No. Somebody has something negative to say. Rate them a one. Tell them. We have to be, let's get real.
Please do let me know. If I could do better and there's something I could do differently, I want to hear about it.
Okay, let's go to the closing segment. Okay, first of all, Gershon, Joel, Yisrael Kleiman, LCSW is coming on tonight, giving tremendous chizik. Very important topic that a lot of people here tonight, and Hashem, hopefully over the years, people, thousands and thousands of people will listen to the share. And hopefully the goal is people start realizing a lot of stuff. Well, I'll get into that in a second. Tonight's share, again, is share 208. And if anybody wants to join our WhatsApp chat, please WhatsApp us at 732-314-1710. And I will send you the link to the community chat. So you can go to menachemburnfeld.com and sign up for the emails. We send the flyers of the speakers, the replays, and all the hack and Coach Menachem land. Please join us again every week, Sunday night at 9:30. Kamat for 5 years. We're going to be soon 5 years very shortly. We've been doing this program tonight, Shares 208. And like I said, at the beginning of the program, we're going to have an amazing speaker next week. It's going to be, I don't want to say better than Israel, but could be better. And it's going to be a surprise speaker. It's such a surprise, I don't even know about it yet. But next Shem, it's going to be, we said this last week, Israel, and you came on. So it's been working. We've been doing this 3 weeks in a row. We've just been so
tell my kids, when I say to them, it's the best trip we ever had, every single time it's true. It could be true every time. This
Correct.
Is the best trip. Last time was the best at that time, you know, so.
Well, this me and Ahmed have been busy just trying to, it takes time to like arrange it. We have a lot of pending, but we just didn't, but now hopefully the next few weeks, we have to catch up with the end of it and just put everybody in a schedule. So it'll be easier. Again, everything's recorded. Mention will be MenachemBurnfeld.com. If there's any questions, you can email coachmenachem@gmail.com. Again, the share will be on his website as well, www.menachemberfel.com. You could listen to the share on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 24/6, 7230, whatever there are, 4 million podcasts, they're on every single one. You could also listen to it on the phone. I'll mention me up a little bit later tonight, 732-305-9011. The direct number is 732-305-9001. If anybody would like to be in touch with Joel Yisrael Kleiman, I'm going to give out your email address, if that's okay, Yisrael, okay?
A lovely idea, Yisrael.
Okay, yes. So Yisrael's email address is yisraelkleiman@gmail.com. I'm going to spell it out, Y-I-S-R-A-E-L, Kleiman, which is K-L-E-I-N-M-A-N@gmail.com. Feel free to email him, whatever you want. And also, we're going to post his book. It's called You and Me Equals We. Again, You and Me Equals We.
You can get it on Amazon. So,
but on Amazon, we put the link on the thing a few times. Menachem will send it out as well, if anybody wants to buy his book. And, again, thank you to all the advertising sponsors, Liquid Scoop, Eli and Ariel, Five Times Central, Chalakal from JCN. We're going to go to the closing segment. I'm going to go first, Menachem, and then Joel Yisrael. You're on here for 2.5 hours. So whatever the Dvar Meyetzev in a leg, whatever comes to your heart, leave it to people. But I'm going to give my thoughts. A few things I just want to mention tonight. Tonight's topic is probably the most important, essential topic in the whole sugya of marriage, in my opinion. It's really communication. I see so many people that struggle with this. Obviously, as the younger generations get younger, it's even worse and worse. And simple communications of expressing feelings and emotions and boundaries gets very complicated, and it becomes very high intense, and we fall into these terrible habits where a husband or a wife could manipulate, but not consciously, by creating this dynamic of like, if I don't want my wife to do something, I'll just act in a certain way. I want to use the word abusive, but in a certain coarse way to get her to do it. And that becomes sort of the relationship. It becomes like this, like, twisted relationship, and it keeps on getting twisted and more twisted and more twisted. And then you have 20 years of marriage where both people are twisted in certain ways, which is almost like, I always use the word for a pretzel. Everybody's like a pretzel because everybody's like, if you go to my father, I won't go to my father. You go to your father. So, I mean, we did this in Shiurim, actually, about, you know, couples that do get married. A lot of people do to this, you know, community. Well, not almost called EFT. EFT therapy. But a lot of premarital couples, we promoted that a little bit. They go to therapists just to explain them, not about what their issues are, but how to communicate. I think it's a very important thing. But a few things I just want to mention again, what we spoke about tonight was so powerful, that being able to express yourself healthy and explaining our situation and being able to respect that another person has a different view or a different opinion is very powerful. We get very tied into our way is the right way, right? This is the way we spend money, or this is the way we do things. But in reality, there's no right or wrong way. It's just that's your opinion, and other people have different opinions. And when you get stuck in your way and you become very aggressive about it, instead of trying to convince your spouse how wrong they are, and how, maybe think for a second before you say anything, maybe think, if I was them, how would I feel in something that I don't want to do? Right? The same way one spouse could totally understand why I don't want to go to that person for Yontif because the parents' house is so small and it's so this and so that. Think about why she wouldn't want to go to your parents, because maybe your mother's nasty to her or something. Whatever it is, just understand there's another point of view. And then once you understand it, you're talking to another human being that you married, that you love. So there's somebody, you're not dealing with a mishugana that you married. After 20 years of doing this, you look at each other like crazy people, because it almost looks like that, but they're not. So it's really getting unhealthy. Obviously, if you're already deep in the situation, it's very knotty and complicated, go to a therapist. A lot of people, Yisrael, you didn't even mention this, but I think as you mentioned, a lot of people have a hard time starting this process. It's very healthy to go to a proper marriage therapist just to start the conversation. And hopefully, absolutely, many trainings and many years being safe in that zone where you could really express yourself, you could learn how to implement some of those skills, not in the therapist's office, because it could be scary and hard. But we mentioned this, Rabbi Russell, but I want to mention it again. I think it's so important. Russell says one of the biggest brachas you can give your children, right, is not to show your children that you don't argue. That's not a bracha. Or not to show your children how amazing of a mother you are, a father, that you always mevater to your spouse. That's not going to teach your kids anything. It's just going to teach them how to live unhealthy. The biggest bracha you teach your kids is how to argue and how to deal in an argument. That means when you see that father wants A and mother wants B, how do they talk to each other? How do they respect each other's opinion? And how do they come to the resolution? It's like this one, they're an adult and they're married in a marriage. They use the same skill set that you train them so they can have a healthy marriage. So this is what we're talking about tonight. Obviously, it's a very deep conversation, and there's multifaceted and there's multi-levels and how to deal with it. But it's a skill that takes many, many years to learn and maybe lifetimes to master. And it's probably the biggest, according to Rabbi Russell, and I agree with it, it's probably the biggest bracha we can give our children if we could show them how to argue respectfully and how to come to a resolution with seichel and yasher and bekavod. That will teach our kids how to lead successful marriages. And it's sad when you see, I'm saying this because I've seen this quite a lot. So many young couples get separated, divorced, and big fights. And then when you really dig into it, there were very small issues that were happening there. Just simple arguments, simple miscommunications, simple unbeing sensitive. And it's a disaster to see that. So everybody's listening to the show tonight. If you feel you have the problem, or like most people feel 95%, it's always the spouse's problem. But the reality is, combined upon upon, if your spouse has this issue, there's a good chance part of the issue is your issue also. And it's something that you have to work on together. It doesn't make you good or bad. It's just something you have to learn as a skill set. So that's my closing. And I'm going to turn it over to Coach Menachem. And Rabbi Yisrael, you'll take it out of the park.
Yeah, thank you, Rabbi Yisrael. Powerful share, very clear. And from the questions that people asked, so you really got down to some deep, deep beliefs and feelings. And Baruch Hashem, we're able to sit here and try to, start the conversation. And like we heard, it's not, it's work. And somebody, if you do it from day one, you build on it. Open communication, relationship, understand each other. Eventually, hopefully, you get to a good place. However, if after listening to tonight's shiur, you decide, you know what? I'm going to tell her how I feel. And she's, I'm going to tell her how I feel. It doesn't work that way. Like we heard, you have to, what's he trying to say? I'm going to be miserable. So, is he trying to be open? Open, communication with his wife? If he hasn't done that in the past and this is the first time, no, that's not open communication. So if it's new to anyone out there, take a deep breath. We're not here to change the other, just to see where you are, and to be vulnerable, to understand each other, to share takes time. So shkoyach, and the way you put it down, I think we came full circle. Baruch Hashem. I'm sure there's a lot impractical, and to actually go get over those eggshells and start doing the work. Not always that easy, but I think we got the idea. So thank you so much.
Okay, B'schus and honor, Joel Yisrael Kleiman, please leave us with brilliant words after 2.5 hours.
So, you asked before for Dvar HaMayotzim and Alev. I think I'll give you those instead.
Yes.
I'm really touched by the tremendous amount of the tremendous amount of Ernstkeit and what tremendous desire to help people and sincerity that I feel from you and from Coach Menachem and really from everybody who I've spoken to tonight. A sense that we're here to grow, we're here to try to do the right thing, we're here to try to do the Ratzon Averi, we're here to shteig. And like you said, you could say brilliant words and you could talk about lofty, wonderful ideas. But you really have to bring heart into it. And I just feel the tremendous lave over here. It's just quite awe-inspiring, I have to say. It's really something. The gematria, the hearts, the lave that it said, and really the lave and the hearts of this program, and the experience of being able to sit with you and everybody here tonight. It's really something, I just have to say. So thank you, everybody, for that.
Well, yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Good, thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful night. I'm sure we'll see you next week with our amazing surprise guest. We're looking forward. I can't wait to be surprised. And everybody, hopefully this year, just listen to it, take it in, and move in that positive direction. Help yourself. Have a wonderful night, everybody. Good night.
Thank you.
Kol HaLashon, a whole world of quality content.